Mark Carmen, Adam Hogue.
Chicago Sports Conversation.
Wide, wide world of sports.
This is The Bean.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your Saturday sports extravaganza, 720 WGN. I'm Mark Carmen. Adam Hogue on his way to Milwaukee, I believe, for a bachelor party or a family gathering or something. Sam Panionovich in the studio today wearing his sweet white button-down polo, about to get out of here at 7 o'clock and do damage in the city that you always do. Sam, good to see you, buddy.
It's good to be here. It's good to be here. You never know when you're coming, but you always want to stay when you're here, so it's fun.
We do have to hand it off to Amy Guth at 7 o'clock, but we have four jam-packed hours of entertainment for you. Very interesting week on the baseball front. First off, I want to give credit to a guy by the name of Dexter Fowler, who I don't know if he's the MVP of the Chicago Cubs, because he's clear. Actually, I know that he's not the MVP of the Chicago Cubs. That would be Chris Bryant and then Anthony Rizzo, 1 and 1A.
In that order for now.
Yeah, right? You agree? So I think Bryant should actually be the MVP of the National League, but we can talk about that at another point. Dexter Fowler, the Cubs go 11-17 without him. He sits out for nearly a month with a right hamstring strain. He shows up last night in Milwaukee. He says, "I'm in the lineup." He says, "Hey, Albert Almora, take you and your newly christened wife." They got married on Thursday.
Surprise, you're going back to Iowa.
"Hey, you too, and the baby that is in your belly, back to AAA."
Baby's due in September, but by that point, if he's healthy, he'll be back here in Chicago because he'll be called up.
Right, and this is no knock on Albert Almora Jr., who showed that he's going to be a good outfielder and hopefully will hit as well. But here's Dexter Fowler, and the guy steps right in the lineup, first at bat, and he hits a bomb to center field to lead off the game.
Crushed it.
This guy's unbelievable. Before the season, he has a three-year deal from the Baltimore Orioles for $33 million, basically signed, sealed, and delivered. I don't know what Theo Epstein, what Jed Hoyer, what Tom Ricketts. This one was all Theo. Gives the call, says, "Hey, listen, bet on yourself. This is where you want to be anyway. We'll give you a one-year deal. Play huge. And you're going to make more money long term, and you're going to have a phenomenal year. And by the way, we may win the World Series. You want to be here. This is the money we can get you." He says, "Okay, I'm betting on myself." And the guy's been unbelievable all season long.
It's been a solid bet, and it's something that was able to develop because of the spread that Theo and Jed and Jason McLeod have been able to lay out. All right, look at this roster. You could be leading off playing center field on a team that'll be favored to win the World Series and break the curse of the Billy Goat. Would you rather do that and get a couple cracks at the postseason because you know they're going to go, whether it's the division or a wild card? I think they're going to be in the hunt the next 5 years at least, probably more. That's the hope.
No, it's in perpetuity. They're never.
But
they're
would you rather play here, or do you want to go to Baltimore and be with a team that's really not as good and the pitching isn't as strong and there's not much hype around Baltimore? I think he'd rather be a role player on a team that can win a title, and that's why he's here. That's why he bet on himself. It all worked out.
And plus, you know, it's rare nowadays, right, that guys actually have a connection with each other and they like coming to work and there's a little buddiness. I mean, most times professional sports, they come, they make their dough, they're out the door, they have their posse, they do the Jimmy Butler Chicago Bulls thing. I'm good. Same thing with Derrick Rose. These guys, I'm not saying they don't have their own lives, but there's a certain something that is built around that Cub team where they hang out together. I mean, look, Albert Almora, who just got here, gets married on Thursday, right? They go to a courthouse in the city. Chris Bryant, Addison Russell, Justin Grimm, Kyle Schwarber, all showing up for the Almora wedding. I don't know why that makes me feel all googly inside, but I enjoy when a team has a certain...
You're romanticizing the team right now.
I am. Is that weird? Is that bad?
No, because it's a likable bunch, and a lot of people are doing the same thing. I don't know if they're, you know, talking about going to weddings. I think everybody goes to each other's weddings in the pros. I mean, that's just the way it kind of works.
Like, if I got married, how many people from WGN would come to a courthouse mid-Thursday? Could I get two? Honestly.
I'd show up.
Would you? I feel like you'd be like, dude, I'm good.
Well, depends on the supply. It depends on what's going on. It depends, you know.
Oh, so right. If you told me I was bringing single women there, you'd be like, yeah, okay, I'll show. Dan Long, producing the program, doing an outstanding job. Bob Nightingale will be here at 4:10. We're going to talk to Chris Hinton a little bit after 6 o'clock to honor Dennis Green, who, if you remember, coached the Northwestern Wildcats from 1981 to 1985 before his great career in the NFL. But Dan Long wouldn't show up. No chance.
No, probably not.
Yeah, see? Thank you for confirming
He's
that.
He's honest about it.
Right.
I at least give you a little bit. Maybe. It depends.
My guy Mike Jacobson, who used to produce this show, there's no chance. He'd be, although he did just go to Iowa for a guy that we used to work with, so he made that effort. But midweek, he'd be like, Carm, I got things to do for the Steve Cochran show. So these guys, the Cubs, Al Mora goes midweek wedding.
It was their off day. They were all off.
Right.
They're off on a Thursday.
Well, exactly. It's even worse. Like, hey, man, it's my one off day. I'm taking a boat out on the lake. I'm flying whatever, you know, whatever Major League Baseball players do on their off day. They don't go to the courthouse for the wedding.
I hope they actually have like an actual nice wedding down the road. I think this was just a way to sign the paperwork and, you know, dot the I's, cross the T's. They better have a wedding.
You're a big wedding guy?
Well, yeah. I feel like a Major League Baseball player needs to fancy the wedding a little bit more.
312-981-7200. Big topic at the start of the show. Did Albert Almora Jr. mess up his wedding like Sam Panionovich just pontificated? that Almora did it wrong going courthouse. He actually needs... What's that movie, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, that type of thing?
You need a crowd. You need a location. You need a church. You need a reception. He had four teammates
awesome.
In a courthouse.
I mean,
even a bar. You got to bring your own bar to that.
See, I always envision...
No hors d'oeuvres.
Listen, weddings cost too much money. It's a waste.
Oh, for a Major League Baseball player?
Why does he got to be one of those guys that's got to spend six figures?
You put that tag on it. I'm just saying, you could have upped the ante a little bit, had a nicer spread.
I mean, I grew up in the North Burbs. Everybody that I know that gets married out there, they go six-figure wedding. You got to have it at the country club, and we got to have a flowing lava cake, and we got to have...
The ice sculpture of the bride.
Yeah, we got to have a, you know, there's got to be three different band options, a DJ plus a band, and then
nothing worse at a wedding than a bad DJ.
You do need a good DJ.
There is nothing worse than a sorry song selection and a goofy DJ.
So maybe Almora Jr. didn't have the DJ going. He's just a rook, man.
He doesn't know any better, right? He's 22. 23?
20. I want to say 22.
21. No, he's older than that.
My bad. He's a very...
You get him confused, all the ages of all the prospects.
This is true. Kyle Schwarber's 23. How old is Jorge Soler?
24. How about Danny Vogelbach hitting a home run in his first at-bat with Tacoma, AAA?
I'm a Vogelbach fan. Anytime the Cubs trade a prospect, and that's that one, if you... weren't paying close attention this week or probably not paying attention at all. Dan Vogelbach, lefty first baseman DH guy sent to Seattle for Mike Montgomery, who is going to be, I would say, probably a pretty big player, right? They need a lefty specialist out of that pen, and he wants to be a starter, but that's going to be his role on this team. Which brings me to our topic coming back here. I want to talk about Theo for a second and how Theo makes your life better. Are you good with that?
Sure.
Because he's Theo. Hashtag Theo. +720 WGN. Hope you're staying cool out there. I got to be honest, I'm dragging just a drop today. Not that you can tell on the radio, I hope. But I had a big-time tennis match this morning, Sam. I know you've been following my career.
I can't believe you played.
I mean, I drenched two shirts today.
This is outside?
Outdoors, baby.
Ugh. That's brutal. I took the recycling out the other day. Two trips. Had to change my shirt. That's how hot it is. And it's even hotter today. And for you to go out there and play tennis, that's crazy respect right there, because I couldn't do it. I walked up the steps and I was exhausted.
It was when I got out of the car getting in today, I was walking at an 86-year-old pace. I was going so slow. I'm like, oh my God, this is not feeling good. All right, and we're going to get into later in the show. We're going to give you some Lou Malnati's for people that have actually achieved highly in the heat today. But
we'll, because that's what you need when you're hot and your AC's off. You need a hot pizza.
Well, I did treat myself to some soup after my tennis match today. I went mushroom soup along with a little tuna salad
like
sandwich.
Coffee.
No, yeah, well,
piping hot coffee.
I caffeinated up today with an herbal biscuit tea refresher. So more importantly than that, I want to talk about Theo. So Theo Epstein, and I joke about this each week, that they should build the statue now, because you know that they're going to get over the hump at some point here, right? Come on, one time.
Odds are good.
Okay. So, and they're having these contract negotiations with Tom Ricketts, and Theo keeps on saying it's not a big deal. Theo can, hey, Tom, $10 million a year, buddy, for 5 years. That's unprecedented money, but what I'm doing is unprecedented. What I've done is unprecedented in Boston. I mean, what could Tom Ricketts say? But regardless of that, my point is this. Kyle Schwarber is a guy that maybe he'll be a great baseball player, or maybe he can't really play the outfield and will never be able to catch again. But with Kyle Schwarber, Theo and company have said, I mean, there's no untouchables, but we love Kyle Schwarber. And it seems like the whole city's like, yeah, that's my guy. You know, Theo, my point is this, if Theo, whatever he says, I think Cub fans are going to agree with him. He could tell you that if they made it, any trade that they make, like the trade that they made for Mike Montgomery this week, he just sells it. We really, you know, Mike is a guy that could be a starter. He could be a reliever. He's under contract for a long time. We see him as somebody who's just coming into his prime. So he's giving you the kind of the lowdown. Hey, we're identifying somebody out there that others haven't. Like I'm wondering if Theo came to you right now on this hot day and said, hey, it's a good decision. Go down to the Chicago River on Michigan Avenue and just, you know, climb yourself up and just leap off. It's going to hurt a little bit when you hit the water, but it's going to refresh you to such a level that next thing you know, you're going to be at a whole different point in your life and you're going to be making tons of money and you're just going to feel that much better.
This is a very strange extreme. This is a very strange hypothetical. I would not jump in the river if you told me to jump in the river. I don't know where you're going with that. That being said, though,
you know what I'm
getting
at,
though. There's a lot of room for error because of all the good faith that he's built up. And it's been funny, the perspective on Theo and the Cubs management has changed since 2011 into 2012. You know, in 2012, they lost 101 games. And the question around town in the papers was, why did they do it? They didn't have to do it this way. Why did they decide to gut it? What are these guys doing? The comments were it was never going to work. And then, you know, early 2015, you bring up Bryant, you bring up Russell, both of them in April. Schwarber comes up in May. The dominoes start piling up, and then it's, oh, you know, now the script has flipped, and now it is crazy. But because of how well-shaped they are for the next couple of spins at the wheel, they have created this extra margin for error.
Well, sports is about second-guessing, right? We all like to think that we could be the general manager or the manager. Some of us think we could actually play.
Some of us.
Myself, as that's the corner that I'm in. So with Theo, people just don't – I just don't think people second-guess the guy. I mean, I kind of used to for a moment in time, but then it's like, you know what? You got to give him his due. I don't know if there's any executive in the history of this city who has the cachet that he does that way. Now, Stan Bowman gets a ton of credit, right, with the Blackhawks 3 Stanley Cup championships, reworking the roster. But, like, to me, feels like on a totally just a different level.
Well, Stan came into a made situation. I mean, let's not sugarcoat it. He came in, they had Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane and Marian Hossa and Nick Jalmerson and Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook and Corey Crawford was in the organization. So he didn't build it from scratch, and that's not to slight anything they'd done over there. Theo came in and dug the whole tree out of the ground and threw it in the wood chipper, and, you know, the only piece left, there's Rizzo and there's Travis Wood. I mean, those are the only guys that they've brought on that are still on this team. Guess how many guys that have thrown a pitch this year were drafted by the Cubs?
How many guys have thrown a pitch this year that were drafted by the
Cubs? On the Cubs roster this year. How many guys that were drafted by the team?
Well, none of the
zero.
None of the starters. Yeah, okay.
So this thing has been turned over. You know, the omelet is cooked on both sides, but now I'm starting to have questions about this. I was on board with the plan. I understood the situation was awful. The miners were awful. They rebuilt everything up. But now my questions are creeping in. And when does the weight of winning that title come in to affect your judgment? Because right now they don't want to trade Schwarber. But if you can get arms in the bullpen like Andrew Miller, like Aroldis Chapman, you cement yourself as a World Series favorite.
312-981-7200. Just throwing that out there. Has there ever been an executive in this town that has as much, that you have as much confidence in? Even in White Sox fans too. Like, you're a Sox guy, right? Is there anybody in baseball that you'd want running your club other than Theo?
I'd take Andrew Friedman in L.A.
But you wouldn't take him over Theo, would you?
Probably not. That's, again, hypothetical. He's one of the most respected minds, not only in baseball, but in all professional sports.
What else would you let Theo do for you?
That's what I'm thinking. I didn't mean to say when, Cub fans. I'm sorry. If they win that World Series, what stops some Wall Street company from walking up and going, hey, run our company, we'll give you $30 million a year? That could happen. Of course that could happen.
Like, Theo, hey, Theo, will you be I'm having trouble in my marriage. Will you be my marriage counselor? Hey, Theo, my taxes, the IRS is after me. Can you hook me up and do my taxes? Yeah, no problem. Is there anything this guy can't do?
Look, Theo.
I don't mean to put him on the huge pedestal here, but I feel like no one has more confidence. You see Theo walking down the street, you're like, That's Theo Epstein, and he knows more about life than
it almost builds in excuses too for North Satters, because if the Cubs, say the Cubs go to October this year and they lose in the World Series,
right, they'll say this is part of the process.
It's all good because we'll be back next year. So it almost builds in layers of excuses. That's what it is, right? Because if they don't win this year, last year they didn't win, they got swept by the Mets, and it was, well, they're a year ahead of schedule. This was supposed to be the year. World Series favorites. Now if they don't win, well, it's all part of the plan. They'll be back next year and for the next couple of years. So it's an interesting web that has spun over this city.
Who do you trust more, your parents or Theo?
My parents.
You sure?
Yes.
312-981-7200. Your parents or Theo? Theo's unbelievable. 630 says Montgomery can go long or short. Good for the playoffs. Might end stay for Wood and Richard. Also good to see the Cubs did not impede the future of Vogelbach.
There was nowhere to play Dan Vogelbach. There was nowhere to play him. Anthony Rizzo is going to be there for 10 more years, and there's no DH, at least yet. So Danny Vogelbach was not going to play in the outfield, was not going to catch. There was no room for him.
Right, but it was a piece that you were going to play at some point, and you wanted to play it well. And so they played it on Montgomery.
The Cubs are kind of hoarders.
They are.
They kind of are hoarders.
They
have a lot of the same things.
Hey, Steve, real quick, you want to talk about what you did in the heat? I feel like we got to honor people
hey,
today,
Steve.
So go ahead.
Hey, I appreciate it. Yeah, I followed my son out doing his Pokemon Go today out in the burbs here, and we went about 3 miles.
That's a good job, Steve.
So is that a mile and a half away, so you have to come back the next mile and a half? Like, you have to go far to come back?
Yeah, I don't know. It was this big circle. Big circle. And it's been a godsend, though. We've been struggling to get him out to, you know, exercise this summer and stuff. And he's got to have some entertainment aspect, and it's done the job.
You're telling me that Pokemon Go is changing your family for the better. I am hearing this correctly?
It is doing that.
That's amazing.
Now, do you at least have conversations with him when he's playing, or is he constantly glued to the phone and staring at the floor? Because I don't have it, Steve. I don't play it. But I've read all these stories about attention spans getting worse and worse by the second.
I have to admit, it's been limited. It's been limited.
Right.
Steve, but at least he's on the move.
Steve, I'm just going to anoint you Father of the Year, at least the father of the show so far, because you're the first father to call the show today. So congratulations.
Hey, you guys rock. I love the Cubs.
Thanks, Dave. You got it. 312-981-7200. Bill Leff's texting in saying, I'll come to your wedding, but I'll probably leave early. love you, Bill Leff. By the way, Bill Leff, news on Bill Leff. I played a guy in tennis today who played Bill Leff yesterday, and Bill Leff lost to this gentleman. and I lost to this gentleman today too. But it was a very. He's like, you work at you work at WGN. Do you know Bill Leff? Yes, I do know Bill Leff. We've played tennis. He's like, well, I played Bill last night. I'm like, how'd you play Bill Leff at tennis last? Well, somebody told me that like when you're just looking for a game that Bill always wants to play. So apparently, like Bill Leff got a random call on a Friday night from a guy that he didn't know. Was like, hey, you want to come out and play tennis? And Leff just raced on out there and dialed it up.
I think we should put Bill's number on Craigslist.
That's amazing. Bill Leff is my hero. 720 WGN.
Already a ton of Cup fans in this ballpark. That one hit the deep center. Back toward the wall. Gone. Off the batter's eye. Welcome back, Dexter Fowler.
How about it? Just right out of the gate. Crushes the ball to center field. Has great at-bats all evening. What are you driving, three of the runs? Wonderful evening for him, and it's really apparent how important he is to us.
Joe Maddon, your Cubs manager. Highlights courtesy of Comcast Sportsnet. They were on the Plus last night. He's hanging out, watching Cubs baseball, flipped over to the White Sox, who played till a little after 11 last night. Another loss for the White Sox. We need two contestants right now. 312-981-7200. We are going to make the trade. We're going to send Chris Sale to the Chicago Cubs. At least we're going to try to. And we're going to send a bunch of prospects to the Chicago White Sox. You have given up on the White Sox season, correct, Sam?
Yes.
When did you officially give up?
May 30th. Because I always say it's 60 days to gauge exactly what a ball team is.
They were 23-10 on May the 9th. They had the second best record in all of baseball.
Maybe it was June 15th.
Okay.
I've got my months mixed up.
They've gone 23-40 since.
Since May
9.
9.
They were 23-10. Now they've won the same 23.
It was June 15th then. I'm thinking June 15th. I didn't put a date on it. I didn't circle it. But I remember it was after... The Royals series was when I was like, uh-oh, when the bullpen blew it three games in a row. That might have been late May. I could check this up. But that was the turning point, and then by the middle of June, you're like, all right, this is it. They peaked already.
So it wasn't earlier this week when
no.
you had a 3-0 lead going to the ninth, and then David Robertson gave up a 3-run bomb to Adelinde, and Hawk Harrelson didn't speak for 50 seconds.
It was 90 seconds of silence.
It was people dog him for that. I think it's great TV. Like, what else? What do you want him to say? I mean, he could go full meltdown. That'd be entertaining, too. But just sitting there with that much anger and being that passive-aggressive in the moment, I kind of enjoy it as a passive-aggressive person myself. Okay, so here's the game. 312-981-7200. If we can make this deal, you're going to get Lou Malnati's pizza. We are going to line up. Sam is going to play the White Sox part of it with a caller. I'm going to play the Cubs part of it.
This is interesting.
And you're willing to trade Chris Sale, right?
For the right price.
For the right price, you'll trade Chris Sale.
Yes.
And I think from a Cub fan's perspective, I'm willing to acquire Chris Sale for the right price. Now, we know that the Cubs and White Sox in all likelihood, are never going to get together on this deal. But you know, there's the whole concept that the Cubs and White Sox can't make trades, it's kind of ridiculous because they have. You had arguably the greatest Cub of all time, and I know people get real bothered by that, but you can certainly make an argument that Sammy Sosa is the greatest Cub of all time, or certainly in the top five, wherever you want to put him. He was traded to the Cubs from the White Sox for George Bell, and the White Sox won a division that year. There was 1998 when the Cubs were trying to get into the wild card. They made a ridiculous trade to get Matt Karchner, who was terrible, and they gave up John Garland, who was a starter for the Sox for a long time. So you can make a trade that would make sense for both teams. I mean, the White Sox right now, it was rumored earlier in the week that Rick Hahn, and you were out there, Sam. It was rumored that they were offered the, quote, mother load for Chris Sale. They said no. So, I mean, I don't think they're going to trade him.
No, there's a 95% chance he's going to play out probably the entire contract because that's how valuable the guy is. He's controlled through 2019. He never makes more than $15 million in a single season, which is ridiculous if you think about it, because Clayton Kershaw this year is making $34 million. That is $25 million more than Chris Sale makes in the 2016 season. That's absurd. So to get him, you have to not only get controllable assets in return, namely some offensive guys that play every day, you have to get some prospects that are on the cusp of booming out at any minute. So, you know, for the Cubs, it would take a major league ready bat. You're talking about Wilson Contreras. You're talking Kyle Schwarber. You're talking Javi Baez. And then you're talking about, you know, some prospects. Let's see. You know, you look at Gleyber Torres, the shortstop. You look at Eloy Jimenez, the right fielder who made that catch in the Futures game. You would take one of those guys at each tier and then maybe some future picks. But those are your staples. You need a major league ready bat and a top prospect before we even get started with that conversation.
Okay, so here, let's do the deal. You just threw some guys out there. Wilson Contreras, who looks like he's going to be a middle-of-the-order hitter.
That's a major league bat that plays.
Who's playing a very good left field, by the way.
That bat plays in the majors, though. That is a major league baseball bat. That is a major league swing, major league timing, major league contact.
Did you see his throw last night from the left field corner?
No.
Okay, he's in the left field corner, like literally the left field corner. He turns and he fires to home plate on a fly the whole way. Now, he didn't get the runner, but it was ridiculous. So you got Wilson Contreras. That's a great pickoff by you. You want Javi Baez? Is that you want Javi Baez too?
There's a lot of guys you could take.
I know. I understand.
So it's those.
You want Kyle Schwarber?
I don't know. I don't know if I want Kyle Schwarber.
You don't want Kyle Schwarber?
I don't think so.
You don't? Okay. So the Cubs get to keep Schwarber.
Yeah.
So you want Wilson Contreras. Who else you want? Start name. Let's hear it. Let's hear your deal.
You're supposed to come to me. I'm the one with the piece that you covet.
Well, no, I mean, I gotta hear what you're willing. What? Give me who you want here. I was gonna offer you. Who do you want, Baez or Russell? I'm gonna give you less if you take Russell, but who do you want between those two?
Probably Baez.
Okay, you want Baez. Okay, so I'm gonna give you, and you want Contreras. That's like he has to be in the deal.
I take Contreras. Yeah.
Okay, so Wilson Contreras has to be in the deal.
Baez
has to be in the deal.
And Bryant, how about that?
Bryant's not gonna be in the deal. But I have other guys for you. Do you want Jorge Soler?
No.
You don't want Soler?
Avi Garcia Jr.? No, I don't want Soler.
Do you want Kyle Hendricks?
No.
You don't want Kyle Hendricks?
No.
It's going to be hard to deal with.
He would get tagged in the American League.
Do you want Ian Happ?
No.
Who do you want?
See, this is where we get a roadblock here.
I don't know if I can make a deal with you.
That's exactly what's happening right now, because it's going to take at least...
Why wouldn't you want Kyle Schwarber on the south side?
I don't know. The ascension from double-A catcher to Babe Ruth-type god in 75 games was a little overstated, I think. See, he hits some big home runs for him, and he projects well. He can hit 35 a season. Some say he can hit 40 a season. I say he's a guy that has two torn knee ligaments. He'll never be the same no matter what happens. The power will be there, but you know he could play left field. He can DH for you, but... I don't know. That's not the centerpiece of a trade for Chris Sale anymore, just because he's hurt.
All right. Well, my deal, this is what I'm offering you. You ready?
This is fascinating, by the way.
I think it is. I love this stuff. I'm offering you... I'll go...
Writing these down in green highlighter. I don't know how you are.
Well, because you just threw a lot of curveballs out here. I didn't anticipate that you were gonna just get all curmudgeon-y on Kyle Schwarber, because you have like you clearly have like a Kyle Schwarber Cub fan irritation.
If Kyle Schwarber didn't just tear his ACL and LCL, then it's a different story. It's a completely different story. This is all based on what has happened to him in the last, 4 months?
Right. Well, here, I got Contreras. I've got Javi Baez. I've got Hector Rondo.
No.
Contreras?
I don't think we have
How about
a deal.
This? Contreras, Baez, Schwarber, Happ, and Hendricks.
No.
No.
No. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
312-981-7200. Can I make a deal with somebody other than Sam? I mean, really?
No, it's no.
So there's no what do you have to have in the deal to make a deal? I didn't realize I was going to be banging against a brick wall here. What do you need?
This is what's going to happen.
Let me hear your deal.
When they call for Chris Sale.
Well, okay, give me a deal you'd do.
I don't think I would do any. That's the point.
You do no deal with the Cubs.
No, probably not. It wouldn't happen. It won't happen.
Are you going to trade Chris Sale, period, if you're the Sox?
I think they might trade him to Boston. If they can get Benedetti and Moncada and one of those pitchers in Double-A, you're talking about three of the top 30 prospects in baseball.
Benedetti and Moncada get you more excited than what the Cubs could offer?
Than Schwarber and who else did you say? Schwarber and Baez? Yeah, for now, yeah.
Schwarber, Baez, you want Albert Elmora Jr.? Just got married at the courthouse.
Well, okay, well now it's a little different. You're sweetening the deal now.
I'm trying to find it. I'm trying to find some love here. I think I don't think the Cubs would give you the load that I'm talking about here. But I do think.
Right, this isn't a video game. You can't hit override when the game denies your trade. You're not dealing with, you know, a computer system that you can just toggle on and off. This is two executives. With these two clubs, it's more executives because there's more in the Sox front office and there's more in the Cubs front office. So you have to put an offer out there that makes four or five guys all sort of nod at the same time. And I don't think that you can fit everything that they're trying to do into one deal with these two teams in this city, given the animosity.
312-981-7200. If you were a Sox fan, I'll ask you a different question. Let's say you traded Chris Sale to the Cubs, okay? And the Cubs ended up winning the World Series this year. But then it resulted in you winning two World Series in 2019 and 2020. Would you do that? Or would you rather have the Cubs still goose-egged?
I think the Sox fans, majority of them would say no World Series for the other guys.
I'll give you two for one.
I don't think it matters.
You'd rather just have the Cubs just... Cub fans just live.
I don't want anybody to suffer. I'm answering for I think a good population of White Sox fans.
I think most White Sox fans want the Cubs to continue to suffer.
Yes, that's what I'm getting at. So the answer to your question is no, you don't trade one World Series for two. You're very full of hypotheticals today. I'm not sure how I feel about it.
I love hypotheticals. Hey, real quick, Jim, you're comparing Kyle Schwarber to Mickey Mantle?
Yeah, because Mickey Mantle had a bit of a career after knee trouble, Sam. He's not Babe Ruth, but Mickey Mantle was pretty good, too.
Mickey Mantle had 10 solid seasons before he stepped in the drain, Jim. He had 10 Hall of Fame seasons before he ever got hurt. Kyle Schwarber had 75 games. Half of them were solid.
Well, all I can say is that he will be in the Hall of Fame, and that's just blue sunglasses.
Schwarber in the Hall of Fame? Really?
You go.
Where's he playing? Long term, where's he playing, Jim?
I'm just the same person that thinks Joe Maddon is the best manager ever.
Okay.
With these blue sunglasses, you can think anything.
That's very true. That's very true. But where do you see him lining up? Assuming you want to keep him in Chicago, where are you playing him? And I'm asking only because I don't know where that spot is right now.
Well, Greg Zmusinski was a butcher in left field, fielding wise, but you keep the bat going. You play him every day because you can't hang up his bat.
Jim, we're up against a break here, so thank you for the call. You're a brilliant man. You're the first person that's ever compared Kyle Schwarber to Mickey Mantle, and I think you're spot on.
He's right. Mantle had good seasons after his knee injuries, but I think he stepped into a drain. I can't remember what year the knees completely betrayed him. I wasn't around, but I am somewhat of a historian.
I feel like you did cover that game. You were out there the day that Mantle stepped in the drain.
I called the AP.
Yeah. 708 texting in. Sam, tell Mark to throw in Maddon, and you'll make the deal.
How about this? You throw in Cap. You throw in Cap. Cap gets to do Sox postgame.
Cap out of nowhere.
Pre and postgame.
Cap out of nowhere.
Make him cover that.
No longer works at this station. 720 WGN. I'm Mark Harmon, trying to do great things for the city. Sam Panionovich just not willing to make a deal that would make everybody happy. You did just get a text from one of your buddies who wants to trade Chris Bryant for.
He said Chris Bryant for Chris Sale, straight up.
Yeah, and you said you'd do that.
I'd do that one. That's a game changer right there.
You take a Chris Bryant.
Bryant for Sale, I think that's pretty much fair game for everybody.
Cubs lineup tonight out. Fowler, Bryant, Rizzo, Zobrist, Contreras, Hayward, Russell, Baez, and John Lackey on the mound. Game two of the three-game series. Our Northside, Southside report sponsored by Vienna Beef. Cubs have won 5 of their last 7 after the break, 6 of 8 overall if you go back to the last game before the break when they won at Pittsburgh.
Got some text here, 214. Carm Sam, I think Schwarber will be traded just like Andrew Shaw, who the Hawks said was irreplaceable right before they traded him. Okay. 847, thank God I got my Carmen tennis update. If I died tonight, at least I know what happened.
Lost to Dan, Mitch.
224, Sammy was the greatest cheater the Cubs ever had. 708, Sam, tell Mark to throw Madden in and make the deal, which you already read. And then 630, guys, stop talking about trading. I won't trade at all. One player won't win a game. And just trickling in from the 563, I don't know where 563 is. I'm usually good with the area codes.
Iowa. I'm 99% certain.
Trade Rizzo for Chris Sale. Schwarber will be your first baseman, which is where he should have been playing this season, and he wouldn't have gotten hurt. That's the old Harry Carey shtick, right? If you play somebody where they should be, they won't get hurt. And if you play somebody where they shouldn't be, they might run into trouble. Harry Carey used to always jive about that.
Well, okay, those guys aren't going. But it'll be – listen, I don't think the White Sox will do anything – with Chris Sale before the deadline, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do something with Jose Quintana.
Quintana makes some sense because he's not the anchor of your rotation. He's not the heartbeat of your pitching staff. He's not going to be a guy that's going to win you, you know, 65-70% of the games. It just hasn't happened. It's never happened with him. He's always kind of hovered around 500, a couple games here, a couple games there. But that's a guy, if you trade him to Boston, I know the Dodgers have made some phone calls. Look, those White Sox phones are ringing. Now, whether they pick him up and talk turkey and actually come to an agreement, I'm not so sure with Chris Sale because I think the point of what we just did and the whole trading thing might not be the most exciting thing in the world is, but that's how those conversations are going to go between those front offices. They're not going to play nice with each other. They're not going to try and help each other out, especially the South Side trying to help out the North Side as they chase a championship. That I just don't think there's enough substance there, and I think there's a lot of opposition on both ends.
Going to talk to Bob Nightingale, national baseball columnist, coming up right after the 4 o'clock news, so we can delve a little bit into the rumors that are out there, and the Cubs apparently are still looking for relief help. But let's give a little props to C.J. Edwards, who weighs 140 pounds.
Nicknamed String Bean.
I mean, he's Pedro Martinez, Montreal Expo Jr., without quite that talent. But this is a guy that came over from the Rangers, if you remember. Who did the Cubs deal for C.J. Edwards? Can you remember?
Matt Garza?
Very good, very good. He comes over, and he was originally going to be a starter, but now in that bullpen, 13 innings over 12 appearances now for Edwards, and Joe Maddon keeps on putting him in big spots.
And he hasn't played him back-to-back, I don't think, more than one time. So he's making sure that the kid stays strong, needs that lower half to be able to move in September, and hopefully for the Cubs, October. He's going to be pitching in some big games because he did this with a guy in Tampa named David Price. He did this with a guy in Tampa named Matt Moore, guys that they brought up that were younger, weren't expected to do much, and they threw him into the fire in Tampa, and that team ended up going to the World Series in 08.
Well, and that's the brilliance of Matt. I mean, you go back to last season, he was a huge champion on getting Addison Russell up to the club, and then he ends up benching Starlin beginning late July, early August, sliding Addison to short, and the team took off from there. He also was a huge advocate of getting Schwarber up last year, this guy's bat, and now this year, C.J. Edwards giving him an opportunity. Same thing with Wilson Contreras. Hey, knock, knock, Theo, knock, knock, Jed. We got a guy down at AAA who, yeah, he's a catcher, but he's a great athlete, too. I'll play him in the outfield some, and we can catch him occasionally. I mean, that's a little bit of an interesting thing, though, because the Cubs went in a tailspin when he was catching more, and the starters weren't pitching as well. So, was it because they had a rookie behind the plate who they weren't as comfortable with? Possibly, right? So he's playing a ton of left. Okay, well, when guys get healthy here, Soler's going to come back. I mean, are you leaving him out in left field? I think those are interesting questions.
I'm going to leave it at this. I know we've got to take a timeout here, but this Cubs window isn't as wide open as people think, namely because there's a guy, a certain pitcher named Jake Arrieta, who isn't under team control much longer.
Well,
and as long as you have him here, that should accelerate the clock. That should accelerate the process, and that should make a lot of those Cub question marks rise in that front office, because if you win a World Series, the value of your franchise goes up by $1 billion. That was reported by Jeff Passan, by the way. So at what point do you take one of those cute little teddy bears and turn him into a big arm that can win you a World Series game? That's the question you have to ask yourself.
We got Bob Nightingale from USA Today, National Baseball Columns, coming up after the 4 o'clock news. Quick timeout. Get you into that news in 2 minutes on 720 WGN.
Surprised you're listening to The Beat?
No, I'm not surprised at anything. I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Chicago sports spoken here. This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
720 WGN. I'm Mark Carman. He is Sam Panionovich. Hope you're having a great Saturday afternoon. Bob Nightingale will be with us at 4:15 as we move around the old baseball world.
By the way, Ken Griffey Jr. On his Hall of Fame plaque, the hat will be forward.
Well, that's good.
I don't like that. The kid always wore it backwards. That's what made him famous, wearing the hat backwards.
You want me to say something that's not popular?
Yes.
Okay, since you brought up Junior, I was going to talk about...
Former White Sox, Ken Griffey Jr.
I was going to talk about what starts here on Monday. We'll do that a little bit. We'll do that after Bob Nightingale. 4 games, Cubs Sox. Can't wait. I'm so excited.
It's sold out. It's been sold out on
it's
both
not
sides
sold
of town.
It's not sold out.
I was told it was sold out.
Okay, I was at the Cubs ticket window this week. You can walk up to the window right now and get any seat you want. Bleachers were available for $99. Field box, like outfields, are $168, whatever ridiculous dollars.
You can walk up to Wrigley right now.
Yeah, if you want to spend $200 a ticket or $100 for a bleacher seat, and I'm sure people would do that. But, like, the ticket prices for the premium games at Wrigley Field, I mean, I gotta be honest, you gotta be out of your mind to spend it. Or just incredibly rich and money doesn't matter to you.
Are you gonna be in the luxury club in 2018?
Well, we can get to that later, too, but that's...
That's amazing.
That's a whole interesting deal. You know, Phil Rosenthal had a good piece in the Tribune about it. You're gonna have empty seats behind home plate. That's what's going to happen. You're going to have these tickets prices are going to go through the roof. It's going to be for corporations. And when the corporations go, they're going to be underneath drinking Grey Goose and soda or whatever they do down there, having $300 bottles of wine that you can't tell the difference. It was $10, half of them.
Eating Osobuco.
Having an Osobucos. And, a carved salmon filet.
Maybe you watch a half an inning out of 9.
Why even bother? You're underneath. You got the TV on down there. You're hobnobbing. You're making deals. And I want to get into that at 4:30, but
it is a cash cow for the Cubs. That's why it's happening. That's why the boutique hotel is going up. That's why the Ricketts family is walking up and down Clark Street trying to talk to business owners about buying them out. They want to own everything. Everything that they do, they want it to pass through Ricketts Land and go through that turnstile and go into that bank account, and it all makes sense.
I don't blame them for a second, but it does change what's going on. So Ken Griffey Jr., since you mentioned him, he's going into the Hall of Fame tomorrow, officially, along with Mike Piazza, and this is he's the highest vote getter, the biggest percentage in the history of the game.
99 point.
Yeah, more than Greg Maddux. More than Babe Ruth, more than anyone.
Well, it's not a strong class. Remember that. The class as a whole isn't very strong.
Fair enough. But, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. was phenomenal with the Mariners up till 29 years old. And then he had a phenomenal year 30 season with the Reds when he drove in 118, hit 40 bombs, and hit 271. But then, okay. 2001, played 111 games, started getting hurt, hit 286, 22 homers. Then the year after that, 2002, 70 games. He hit 264, 8 home runs. 2003, plays in 53 games. Middle of his career here now, 247, hit 13 homers, drove in 26. His year 34, like this should be like the back end of your prime, 253 with 20 homers and 60 RBIs. I mean, these aren't even all-star numbers. And yet, he's the highest vote getter in the history of baseball. Not to have a weird bother on Ken Griffey Jr., who doesn't get talked a lot about in the city, even though he had a cup of coffee with the White Sox when he was 38 years old. But that's the guy that's got the most unanimous percentage?
He was beloved by everybody.
Clearly.
Players, opposing players, coaches, opposing coaches. The writers loved him. The broadcasters loved him. And then you look at the big numbers, 630 home runs, 1,800-plus RBIs, the OPS 900. He had 13 All-Star appearances, 10 Gold Glove awards. Most of his numbers, you're right, were pounded in that 10-year window because he came up when he was 19 in 89. Through that 29 season in Seattle, he was popping out 40 home runs a year, driving in 100 runs a year, scoring 100 runs pretty much every year. But
he was basically a dog for the Reds.
Wouldn't say a dog. He put some weight on, and then he had some injury problems.
He got fat. He got hurt.
I remember reading those reports about those Reds dugouts with Adam Dunn and Ken Griffey with their backwards hats and their home run derby swings and their beer bellies. I remember those stories out of Cincinnati that the work ethic wasn't there for that squad.
Until he turned 37, he went – this were his games. His first year, he played 145 games. He had a very good season. Then 111, 70, 53, 83, 128, 109. He was hurt, which – I understand that, okay, you don't want to fault him for getting hurt, but you can't. This is the guy? This is number one of all time? That when he went to Cincinnati, that was supposed to be like the greatest thing ever. He was basically, I mean, he was a huge disappointment in Cincy.
Yes.
I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
All right, Bob Nightingale from USA Today. What's going on with the trade rumors? Are the Cubs going to make any more moves? What's he hearing with Chris Sale and the White Sox? He's next, 720 WGN.
I get to be on stage with a whole lot of people that have set a bar. And only a few get to join. So it'll be quite interesting because I'm going to be a rookie again. And hopefully they don't tease me too much.
That is Ken Griffey Jr. going into baseball's Hall of Fame tomorrow. Cooperstown. Bob Nightingale, one of the best at covering the game of baseball, does it for USA Today, MLB Network Insider, and he joins us now on 720 WGN. Bob, we've been creating a Chris Sale to the Cubs deal. I have some fine pieces to send over if I'm Theo Epstein, and I've been playing it out here with my partner Sam Panionovich as he's been Rick Hahn. He wants Chris Bryant. I've been unwilling to do that, but there are some pieces that would make sense here. I don't think it's going to happen, but do you see the White Sox being aggressive in any shape or way? Because I know you hear what's going on. What are you hearing about what's going on the south side of Chicago?
Well, obviously a very frustrating season, and I think, you know, all about four guys are really up for sale. I mean, they're not going to. I do not believe in any way they would ever trade Chris Sale, who I think has more trade value than any player in baseball, considering his talent in a club-friendly contract. I mean, if you're ever going to win, you need this guy, and he's still in his prime. I could see Quintana, you know, being possibly moved. I can't see Rodon being traded or Tim Anderson. But I think anybody else is up for grabs.
Bob, I just picture that thought of the White Sox helping the Cubs out, and I know it's probably never going to happen, but, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf signing off on a trade that would send Chris Sale to the Cubs, that would never, ever happen, would it?
No, it never would. I mean, better chance of us being elected president, beating out to Trump and Clinton, that knowing the White Sox front office and Jerry Reinsdorf or anything else, there's, and I don't care if the Cubs traded back their entire franchise, they would never send a player to go help out the Cubs.
Hey, Bob, what are you hearing about Theo Epstein's negotiation with Tom Ricketts? I mean, Theo always says they have a great rapport, great relationship, and they'll get it done. I mean, if Andrew Friedman's worth $7 million a year to run the L.A. Dodgers, I mean, what is Theo Epstein worth? I mean, I almost argue that he'd be worth double. The guy's, you know, he won three Worlds, or helped get three World Series, at least to Boston, was there for two, and now look what he's done with the Cubs. I mean, come on.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the point of contention right there is Andrew Friedman. Now, it's been widely reported that he got a, you know, five-year, $35 million contract for the Dodgers. People in the know that have seen the contract said that's wrong. It's actually 5 years for $50 million. So that's the thing. You know, the Cubs want to make Theo the highest-paid executive. But what, you know, what is the highest paid now? Is it 35 or is it 50? I think it's 50. I think Theo believes it's 50. So I think that's the only thing holding up. It's just, you know, when he's the highest, where does it go? Does it go in the mid-50s or go in the mid-40s?
Bob Nightingale, MLB columnist for USA Today with us on 720 WGN. Saw you at Wrigley early in the week. You were there for a little Cubs and Mets action. You've got the national perspective on it. You're not there every day, but when you were here, Bob, at Wrigley, can you paint a picture of the ball club, starting with the manager down, what this team means this year for this Cubs fandom?
Well, just, you know, it's a you know, virtually flawless. I mean, they yeah, they've had some bullpen hiccups, and then they got Mike Montgomery should help that. You know, if they could get their, you know, hands on Andrew Miller, they'd do that in a heartbeat just to kind of sew the thing up. But, you know, they get so many versatile players. You know, doing this without Schwarber, too. The fact that Arrieta started off strong after the break, Lester's still doing great. You know, the no problem in the rotation. So, you know, they have, you know, the best chance of any team in baseball to reach the World Series, and that's why they're favorites. And they should remain favorites. I just don't think there's any team that's really equipped to stay with them. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the Nationals and the San Francisco Giants. But both those teams have to make some trades to stay with the Cubs.
Bob Nightingale, USA Today. Okay, well, the Giants have lost, what is it now, six in a row, and I guess, you know, whatever long season, small sample size doesn't really matter. But in what I'm going to is the Yankees are playing well right now. You're talking about Miller coming over, and then I think a lot of Cub fans would like to see Aroldis Chapman here closing out games, you know, in down the stretch here. You can't do better than that. What's your sense on what Brian Cashman and the Yankees are going to do?
Well, I think Chapman's, I don't care how many games the Yankees win, will definitely be gone. He's a free agent, you know, at the end of the season. They got him for pretty much nothing, so they're going to make a killing trade-wise. And you still got Chapman and Betances in the bullpen. So you're set there in relief. And who wants to pay, you know, $15, $16 million for a closer anyway? So I think he's gone, and we'll see about Beltran, who's also a free agent. I think Miller, you know, someone would really have to knock the doors off. You know, just like the talk of Schwarber, you know, they would do it for Schwarber in a heartbeat. The Cubs won't do that. And they're not going to send Chapman and Miller to the Cubs for Schwarber. That's not going to happen. So, I just think the Yankees will kind of retool but not completely overhaul the team.
What do you think Schwarber's value is? I mean, what could Schwarber bring on his own?
I mean, he could bring Chapman on his own. He couldn't bring Miller on his own. But the trouble with Chapman is that, you know, if the Cubs have a big lead here, and they're going to win this division no matter what. So you don't need Chapman to win the division. You need Chapman in October. So you really want to give up a huge costly piece for a guy who might pitch, you know, maximum, you know, nine games in October. You know, you're not going to do that. At least with Miller, you're down for 2.5 years. But the Cubs won't even, you know, give up Schwarber for that. So he's a guy, I mean, everybody loves, you know, his hitting stroke and everything else. Very questionable when he can get a catch again. Obviously, left field a little shaky. But just his makeup and character, you know, the Cubs have completely fallen in love with.
Who's the best player that'll be traded by August 1st, do you think, across baseball? Any big names that'll shock us?
I don't think it's shocking name. I don't. You know, I think the best would either be a Jonathan Lucroy from the Brewers or a Jay Bruce from Cincinnati Reds.
So a down year as far as sexy headlines for the trade market.
Yeah. Nothing like a year ago. I mean, last year, we had David Price, Cole Hamels, Johnny Cueto. You know, nothing like that. You know, who knows? Maybe the best player traded would be Todd Frazier, you know? Frazier might be better than both those guys, so he might be the best guy traded.
Hey, Bob, what do you think about baseball trying to – they want to speed the game up. This is Rob Manfred is having a meltdown weekly here. First, they want more balls in play, so they want to raise the strike zone from the bottom of the knee to the top of the knee with the idea that there will be more balls in play. And now earlier this week, Rob Manfred said that, hey, maybe we should consider limiting the amount of relievers you can use in a game. So the relievers are just too good, and we want to create offense late in games so people aren't just watching strikeouts in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning. Does that have any legs? Is that real?
No, you can't do that. I mean, one way to stop that is, you know, get the roster in at 25 and limit it so that a reliever can't pitch 3 or 4 days in a row. And I think where baseball's concern is, someone told me it's like 75 or 80% where if somebody has a lead at the seventh inning, they win. So I think their concern is just a lack of action. I mean, we're seeing home runs hit a better rate now since 2000. Strikeouts are all-time high. And walks are way up too, so there's a lot of inaction going on. I mean, it's either home run, walk, or nothing.
My partner doesn't think that Ken Griffey had the best career or the best conditioning after the age of 30. And if you look at the numbers, Bob, there were a lot of down years in Cincy. He didn't play all that many games. Some seasons, the power numbers were down. But this guy is a surefire Hall of Famer. How would you summarize Ken Griffey Jr.'s career? No, let him.
Wait, hold on.
Because you said after 29, like, he was kind of a bust.
But before you answer, Rob, all I'm saying is I don't think that Ken Griffey Jr. should be the highest percentage vote getter in the history of Cooperstown. I don't think he warrants that. But I think Bob's going to be with me on this. Go ahead, Bob.
No, I mean, you can't say Ken Griffey Jr. should get more votes than Babe Ruth or, you know, Hank Aaron or Willie Mays, so I agree with you there. I think just the vote total is because he was beloved. And just a guy kind of made everybody happy and, he became so popular in commercials, the backwards hat, the smile, everything else. And he was a guy who was almost like, hey, you played in the hard at steroid era, but nobody ever talked about him with steroids at all. It was, to pretty much everybody else. So I think that's why. But you're right about leaving Seattle. I mean, even he said today, do I regret going to Cincinnati? He said, no. But do I wish things were different? He goes, yes. He had a lot of injury-plagued seasons. And there was always questions about, he was so devoted to the family and doing things. I don't think he spent those hours in the gym like a lot of other guys did.
I assume you agree that the writer should continue to be the gateway to Cooperstown?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, if there's ever a mistake or people don't agree, there's going to be a Veterans Committee and different committees formed if there was a mistake made. Like, I do believe Jack Morris was a mistake. I firmly believe he should be in the Hall of Fame, and I hope that's corrected. I like the way it is.
Do you have a vote, Bob?
I do.
Okay. Now, are you a guy that, like, hey, I'll vote for you in year three, but I won't vote for you in year one?
No. The only way I wouldn't vote for a guy in year one is if my ballot's full. There's so many guys that deserve to be in the Hall of Fame now. Used to be you vote for 2-3 guys. Now my ballot's full with 10 guys. So I haven't voted for, say, Mike Mussina yet or I'm trying to think of the Jeff Kent. I believe both are Hall of Famers, but I used to have not had room in the ballot. And one of my reasons is I vote for the guys with the steroid allegations and those sort of things, just because they play in the era. And I say, you vote for the best guys of that era, because everybody was doing something back then. It's just a matter of who got caught.
So you think Sammy should be a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, I used to vote for Sammy every year. Same reason. I mean, let's face it, Mike Piazza's in the Hall of Fame. I mean, there were more suspicions involving Mike Piazza than any player who ever played a game of baseball. Sammy never failed any drug tests and over 600 home runs and great for baseball. So, yeah, I'd vote for him for sure.
And the last elephant in the room, Bob, we appreciate your time here on WGN. I always have to ask about Pete Rose. I don't know what your opinion is, but I have this vision of him being put in, but you know he's no longer breathing when they finally put him in. Like he goes posthumously.
I'm with you in there. I don't think they trust Pete Rose. I think if he got in, they're afraid of what he would do or what he'd say. And I do think he will get in the Hall of Fame, but yeah, I don't think he'll ever be allowed to see it.
Okay.
Bob, appreciate the time as always. Continued success and great work to you, and thanks for jumping on WGN.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
All right, Bob Nightingale, USA Today.
I can't say that word, posthumously.
Yeah, I don't know what
posthumously?
You said.
I don't know.
Posthumously.
I can spell it. Who was, I can't say it.
One more time, Bob.
Kessler.
Posthumously.
Posthumously. I kind of just sizzled through that word.
Sizzle through everything.
Accuracy in how you speak is overrated in radio. You can just...
At least he agreed that Pete Rose is getting in after he croaks.
I like that Bob wouldn't go was repping Sammy there. Not everyone's repping Sammy these days. I'm a Sammy guy. You know why? It was fun. It was a lot of fun. People get real hyped on that. Time to take sides. Watch the Chicago Cubs battle the Chicago White Sox for the Crosstown Cup next Tuesday through Thursday on WGN-TV, where Chicago's very own play. Quick timeout. We'll get you into the 4:30 news, and then I have a major personal issue that I need your help with. 720 WGN. Good news, Cub fans. Or Joe Nathan fan specifically, he'll be with the club on Sunday. New addition to the bullpen, Joe Nathan. Rehabbing and low-risk option. All right, I got a major personal issue here, Sam.
Yeah.
So, and it's rare that I feel a little bit uncomfortable talking about family issues on the air, but my brother, my sister-in-law, and my niece have all headed out to Seattle for a week. And they have selected me after numerous candidates.
I was going to say, where were you on the pecking order?
I mean, I had to go through a massive screening test because they asked who was going to take care of six-month-old Luna the dog. And Luna the dog is a Labradoodle.
You are far from a dog whisperer, too.
I consider myself... kind of, I'm not going to say a dog expert, but when I did the Jack Tripper lifestyle in my 20s, me and two beautiful women, Amy and Kate, we had Belle the dog. And nobody took care of Belle the dog more than I did. Belle and I bonded. But Belle was a black lab and was incredibly well-trained. Like, you could go out on the sidewalk on School Avenue where I lived, and you could throw the ball, and if it went into the street, Belle would just sit there at the curb and just look at the ball and, like, look back at you and, hey, you're going to come get that ball. And I'm like, Belle the dog, you're incredible. Luna the dog would not do such a thing. So Luna the dog is...
Luna seems to be a rather fit name for this dog.
Well, this is a Labradoodle, and what I've learned apparently is that Labradoodles have poodle in them, and they're neurotic. This dog has got some neuroses. So
is this dog a Gemini too?
I don't know what that means.
I can only imagine, like the horoscopes, like Gemini. It's said that Gemini are crazy because they're two different people.
Well, I don't know Luna's birthday, so...
Well, you should ask her next time you see her.
Okay. Well, so Luna... By the way, I'll tweet out a picture of Luna at the car coming up here. Beautiful Luna. Yeah. So Luna gets dropped off last night. The brother comes over. The sister-in-law comes over.
Her brother and sister-in-law or your brother and
sister-in-law? My brother and sister-in-law. They drop off the dog. 30 minutes after the dog is... I'm sitting there watching Cub baseball. 30 minutes after... the family leaves. The dog is at the door just whimpering. I'm like, you got to go out? I think you're good, but maybe we can go out. I open up the door. She sees that brother-in-law and sister are not there, and it's just pure depression.
Free-for-all.
Right.
It's a free-for-all of emotion.
So this morning when I get up to take her out, you know, I'm saying you want to go outside, all that stuff. I get all excited, want to go outside. I open up the door. Luna goes... tail between the legs, dig into the carpet, and I live on a second floor of a three flat, and will not go down the stairs. I have to pick the dog up, carry it down to get her outside. I'm like, we're going outside. You want to go outside. You're a dog. This is an exciting moment in your day. This is the best part of your day. And then same thing before I came to work here. One more takeout. I got to carry her down the stairs.
The dog doesn't like you.
So okay,
it's clear. The dog can't stand you.
All right, I need two things here. What's going on, and how do I get through this? 312-981-7200.
Step number one, put some raw bacon in your pockets.
Raw bacon in the pocket? I had treats. I went back deck. She wouldn't go out the front door, so I went to the back deck. She was terrified of the back deck, too.
Raw bacon in your pocket will satisfy a lot of things.
I mean, I do actually have some bacon at home. I could go raw bacon.
I had a buddy who he knew that this girl he was trying to woo was a dog owner. And this dog was a very aggressive dog and didn't like a lot of strangers. He went to her house to pick her up on their first date, and he put a piece of bacon in his pocket, knowing full well that the dog's sense of smell would pick up on it and the dog would love him, and it worked out. Swear.
So your guy strategized that if the dog loves me, then
it's
then
universal the girls, love because right. The magnetic field of the love from the dog kind of spreads.
Okay. Well, I mean, I feel like there's got to be a strategy to how do you get the dog to be willing to go down the stairs? Because listen, during the week, I get up in the morning. I got to be at work at 8 a.m. I can't be messing around for.
It can't take you an hour to take the dog.
Right. And I got to come back from work, take him out at lunch. How do you get the dog down the stairs without having to lift her up? Because I feel like I'm going to get bit at two. Like at some point, she's not going to like it. 312-981-7200. The other thing is like my other option is maybe I just go and back to my brother's place and stay there. If you're going to be this unwilling to go down the stairs, I can't live my life this way.
The worst is when you get the opportunity to watch a dog that hasn't been neutered. And also doesn't, like, ever leave the house. And you have to watch that dog who's bouncing, ping-ponging around the walls, and then they start humping the chair. You know, it's awful. Because they're not trained well, and there's a lot of, if it's a male dog that doesn't get out and around, there's a lot of pent-up stuff for that dog. That's the worst dog-sitting opportunity.
Well, and that's the other thing.
That's the worst.
I'm on the couch last night. I don't think that my 872 texting and call Steve Dale. I don't want to call Steve Dale. We might call Steve Dale, but I'd rather talk to an amateur, somebody who's in the trenches with me here. We don't need a professional. 312-981-7200.
That's a great tagline for this program. We don't need a professional. Well, we need an amateur.
I want to know what maybe we'll get Steve on the line. But
hey, Mark.
yeah. You're screwed. Okay, that's the other thing, too. I don't know what their rules are, but I'm watching the baseball game last night. He keeps on, or she keeps on running up to me and wanted to, you know, give me a little love of the face. I'm like, listen, why don't you just hop up on this couch, take a little siesta, and let's watch the baseball. I don't think she's allowed on the couch, but she gets on the couch, sits there peacefully, puts her head on my leg, and is just legit focused in on Cubs Brewers baseball.
You've got to think about what the dog wants more than anything else. And most times,
okay, but
it's treats. It's raw bacon in your pocket, Mark Carmen. Do it today. Put it in a Ziploc bag, tuck it in your pocket, see what happens.
Dog comes out of the condo. Dog doesn't want to go down the stairs. Got to pick up the dog. How do you get the dog downstairs? Save my life.
Bacon everywhere.
312-981-7200. I don't think a treat will work, but I think that's Lori's advice here. Lori, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Lori.
Hi. Hello. Thanks for taking my call, guys. By the way, yes, treats will work because they start training dogs. First of all, does your brother have stairs in his home?
He does, but he doesn't have...
Okay.
It's one of those townhome that's got like three flights of stairs. The dog will run up the stairs on the way back in, although I do have to give a little bit of a tug.
Okay, but then what you can do is take a treat, put it in front of their nose, put it, and then show it down towards the next step, put it there, and then you can do the same thing with another treat on the other stair. Put it in front of their nose and say, step down or down, which is, you want them to walk down. It's a command.
Lori.
And then you praise them.
Okay, but Lori, here, jump in here with me. It's Monday morning. I got to be at work at 8. I'm waking up. I don't have one step at a time to go down with this animal. Like we got to
hit the dance floor.
You got to get a little bit earlier because it's intimidated. And if you work on it in the evening, even just for fun, you have to play with it. So if you like work with it when you get home, do it for 5-10 minutes, break away, and then come back and do it again. Yeah. It's repetition and it's praise, and you're giving them a treat.
Lori, I've seen Mark try and untie his shoes. Not a pretty sight. You know, he gets like one way through and then he just gives up and throws the shoe out. So I don't think the patience is where it should be.
So, okay.
Have him sit on the stairs and go one step with the dog down the stairs.
Okay. Well, Lori, I appreciate the advice here. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for making the call.
You're very welcome.
All right. 312-981-7200. 773 texting, and the dog is a puppy. It's scared in general. I hope it has peed on your pillow. That's funny, but not very nice. And there's the other thing too. When my brother and sister-in-law and niece are out, they put the dog in the crate. I feel like the dog should just be able to run around. Am I doing is that a bad thing?
You're doing a terrible job. 312-981-7200. Darlene, I think, is on the money here. Hi, Darlene. Welcome to the beat.
Hi. My advice is move back in the home where the dog lives, because this poor dog has been taken away from its home, and all the people he loves are gone. So the dog is totally confused. It's living in a new place with a new person, has new rules and scary stairs. And so I think the best thing for you is go, if it's not
find
too
a realtor, apparently. Get a realtor.
What?
I was like, get Mark needs yeah, a new realtor with some better stairs.
Hold on a second here, Darlene. It's a dog. Like, first of all, the dog does know me. We've hung out before. I mean, the dog's following me around the condo all day long. He's smiling. He seems happy. Last time I checked, I thought that all the dogs really cared about was, when am I eating? When do I get to go outside? And, I've got a cool place to sleep.
But this dog has been somewhere else for probably 4 months.
Yeah, that's right.
And it got used to that. First it was at a breeder, probably. Then it goes to a new home, has all these wonderful new people. Now they've left him, and now he's left his house that he knows. Dog is totally confused.
So you're siding with comfort. You're saying comfort is everything, Darlene.
No, I'm saying you want a happier dog. I'd move in there, and the dog has rules in its house, and it'll be happier there than trying to teach it new rules at your place. And stairs are scary to dogs.
Why?
Try looking down a bunch of stairs.
Okay.
Try looking down 80 stairs or something. Why is it? They're just different stairs.
Okay.
That's why they're scared. Okay, we had a rescue dog. And it was a Shetland sheepdog, and they bark all the time. But this one didn't bark. And I asked, what's wrong with this dog? It doesn't bark. And they said it's grieving. And it'll take 6 months. And at 6 months, the Sheltie started barking.
All right.
And so that's what I'm saying. It's grieving.
This dog's barking, so we're not in that.
No, you're not at that part.
We're not at that part.
The dog is sad. All the people are gone, and the house is gone, everything. But, poor thing. We'll have fun.
Thank you, Darlene. Appreciate you.
It's a nice breed.
Yeah. thank you so much.
I would like to counter one thing that Darlene said. There's nothing more challenging than walking up your case of stairs at like 2 in the morning on a Friday night. She talked about walking down the stairs. Walking up the stairs sometimes can be a challenge for some.
See, okay, I'm not satisfied. We're going to continue this for one more segment. If you're on hold, please stay there. If you'd like to join the show, 312-981-7200.
Hang on, Donna. Donna's got a great response for you.
Okay, this is 720 WGN. Back in two. I also want to know, what is the long-term ramifications if I don't leave the dog in the crate when I'm gone? When his family comes back next Monday. I've got the dog for a week. We'll have an update on the beat next weekend. I know you're excited about that, Sam. I mean, what I mean, I'm not really worried. Like, what's the dog going to do? Eat my couch? Because he was gnawing on some pillows last night.
He's got some great texts. Hey, Carmen, I will babysit your dog in my house for some pizza gift cards. Come to Albany Park.
I live by Albany Park. That would be convenient. I can't do that, though.
630 Mark, get a stuffed dog.
Not going stuffed dog. I do have a stuffed duck. That's my
847 Lori, get a dog walker.
See, and that's the other thing. Like, if you get a dog walker,
then you're out money too, money and time. And then 214, threaten to trade the dog for a younger starter. That should do it.
You wanted to talk to Donna, 312-981-7200. If you're just joining 720 WGN, I'm taking care of my brother, sister-in-law, and their niece's dog.
Poorly taking care of it.
I think I'm doing a great job. We're on the second floor of a three flat. The dog won't go down the stairs. The dog needs to be picked up to go out. I want to know how I can do better here. And I also am kind of curious, if I don't put the dog in the crate when I'm gone and just allow the dog the rule of the roost and just let him have a nice, peaceful time on the couch or whatever he's going to do, will that make him feel more comfortable quicker? Hope they're not listening in Seattle. Donna, you are on 720 WGN. What's up, Donna?
Hi, how are you?
We're good, Donna.
Well, I got a question for you. I used to have to carry my 93-pound Rhodesian Ridgeback down the stairs.
Well, 'cause she...
And at the time, I only weighed 110 pounds and was only 5'4".
That's a serious return on investment.
Why did you have to carry her down the stairs?
Because she was afraid to go down the stairs as well.
Just fear.
So this dog was 17 pounds lighter than you were.
Yes.
And Mark, how heavy is your dog, your brother's dog?
It's 40 pounds tops.
40 pounds?
Maybe 30.
And you weigh how much?
173.2 pounds as of yesterday.
So by Donna math, you should be fine. Just quit complaining and pick the dog up.
Yeah.
All right. Are you
with me, Donna? That's what it sounds like.
I feel like I'm cheating the dog's growth.
That's exactly what it sounds like. That's exactly what it is.
I agree.
I used to do this for 6 months. And then finally, she went down the stairs by herself because I was heading up and somebody was in the basement and they came and started yelling at me and she thought I was being threatened. So she ran down the stairs herself to protect me.
Well, that's beautiful. Good job, Donna. You're better at this than I am. Just know that if you haven't figured that out already. Thank you for the call. 312-981-7200. 773. I find it odd and disturbing that you haven't mentioned the dog's name.
Luna.
The dog's name is Luna, and I definitely mentioned Luna.
You mentioned it in the first segment. You didn't mention it since we...
Okay.
Rejoined the conversation.
The dog's name is Luna. Hashtag Luna the dog. Carrie, 720W. Yes, hi. Yes, Carrie.
I think maybe Luna's afraid to go because she relates the apartment, your place, to where her owners left her last. So maybe she doesn't want to leave because that's where she wants them to come back to her. So she's reluctant to go out.
Ooh.
But she's happy to go back in.
Ooh.
Maybe if you cajole her, come on, it's okay. And put a good strong harness on and help her down.
I have been doing some good cajoling. I give myself an A in cajoling.
Okay, now call Steve Dale.
Okay.
I think the crates are supposed to be their comfort zones, aren't they? Like being in a crate. That's what I've been told, but I never did crate training.
Yeah, no, she. This dog goes right into that crate. There's no problem. So that's accurate, at least as far as Luna the dog is concerned. Thank you, Carrie.
Okay, thanks.
All right, 6 year old texting. This is very sad that people who own the dog should never have left it with you. You have no clue how to handle the poor thing when he's been totally displaced. That's a shame, and it's the fault of the people who own the dog. They let you take care of it. And I use take care of very loosely, very, very sad, and this is obviously miserable for the poor dog.
Hard to find anything to argue with there. I've got nothing.
What have I done wrong there, 630? I'm on the radio trying to make this dog's life better, and I've lifted the dog down the stairs so it can go out. What have I done wrong? Jeez, Jackie, 720.
Hi, how's it going?
Go ahead.
I have a couple of solutions. So, is it a very nervous dog?
Yes.
What kind of dog is it?
Labradoodle. Full schizo.
Oh, yeah. Those dogs are high anxiety. I used to be a dog wrangler, and I would go to people's houses, pick up their dogs, and we would run off leash with these dogs, like 30 dogs in a giant pen outside in the woods.
Wait a minute. You buried the lead here. You used to be a dog wrangler. How does one become
a dog wrangler?
Are there internships for this? How does this materialize?
No, it's like a full-time job. It was this woman in Rhode Island owned this company, and we drove these giant Honda Element trucks that had the back seat were ripped out, and we piled in like 10 or 15 dogs per truck, and then we rode out to like a plot of land that was fenced in, and the dogs were like off leash the whole time.
That's fascinating. Yeah. So just real quick, we've got to hit a timeout real quick. What is your quick solution to help Mark get Luna down the stairs without, God forbid, he pulls a back muscle?
Two solutions. One, sometimes not having them on a leash just to get down the stairs helps them like run faster. They don't feel nervous. They don't get tied down.
Okay.
So that might help.
I could do that.
Two, if you have a long set of stairs, is it like wooden and slippery?
Nope, it's carpet.
It's carpet? Okay, that was going to be my other solution. They sometimes feel like they're going to fall, so if it's like carpeted stairs, that would be another good way to keep it going.
So
but yeah, try off leash. That might help.
So I go, no leash, just throw a treat down the stairs and be like, go get it.
Well, you should also be at the bottom of the stairs.
I should be at the bottom. Okay. All right.
And then tell to come.
All right. Thank you, Jackie.
Good luck.
Appreciate you.
And the bacon in your pockets.
Yeah. Steve Dale is on hold, but we are late for the news, so maybe Steve will hang on until after the news. I'm hoping that he will. We're going to talk to a professional to finally solve this thing.
Let's do it.
720 WGN.
Surprised you're listening to The Beat?
No, I'm not surprised at anything. I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Chicago sports spoken here. This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
720 WGN. I'm Mark Carmen. He is Sam Panionovich. Hope you're having a great Saturday afternoon. Bob Nightingale will be with us at 4:15 as we move around the old baseball world.
By the way, Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah.
On his Hall of Fame plaque, the hat will be forward.
Well, that's good.
I don't like that. The kid always wore it backwards. That's what made him famous, wearing the hat backwards.
You want me to say something that's not popular?
Yes.
Okay, since you brought up Junior, I was going to talk about...
Former White Sox, Ken Griffey Jr.
I was going to talk about what starts here on Monday. We'll do that a little bit. We'll do that after Bob Nightingale. Four games, Cubs Sox. Can't wait. I'm so excited.
It's sold out. It's been sold out on
both
sides of town.
It's not sold out. It is not sold out.
I was told it was sold out.
Okay, I was at the Cubs ticket window this week. You can walk up to the window right now and get any seat you want. Bleachers were available for $99. Field box, like outfields, are $168, whatever ridiculous dollars.
You can walk up to Wrigley right now.
Yeah, if you want to spend $200 a ticket or $100 for a bleacher seat, and I'm sure people would do that. But, like, the ticket prices for the premium games at Wrigley Field, I mean, I got to be honest, you got to be out of your mind to spend it. Or just incredibly rich and money doesn't matter to you.
Are you going
to
be in the luxury club in 2018?
Well, that's actually, we can get to that later, too. But that's...
That's amazing.
That's a whole interesting deal. You know, Phil Rosenthal had a good piece in the Tribune about it. You're going to have empty seats behind home plate. That's what's going to happen. You're going to have these tickets prices are going to go through the roof. It's going to be for corporations. And when the corporations go, they're going to be underneath drinking Grey Goose and soda or whatever they do down there, having $300 bottles of wine that you can't tell the difference. It was $10, half of them.
Eating Osabuco.
Having an Osabucos. And, a carved salmon filet.
Maybe you watch a half an inning out of nine.
Why even bother? You're underneath. You got the TV on down there. You're hobnobbing. You're making deals. And I want to get into that at 4:30, but
it is a cash cow for the Cubs. That's why the boutique hotel is going up. That's why the Ricketts family is walking up and down Clark Street trying to talk to business owners about buying them out. They want to own everything. Everything that they do, they want it to pass through Ricketts Land and go through that turnstile and go into that bank account, and it all makes sense.
I don't blame them for a second, but it does change what's going on. So Ken Griffey Jr., since you mentioned him, He's going into the Hall of Fame tomorrow, officially, along with Mike Piazza. And this is he's the highest vote getter, the biggest percentage in the history of the game.
99 point.
Yeah, more than Greg Maddux, more than Babe Ruth, more than anyone.
Well, it's not a strong class. Remember that. The class as a whole isn't very strong.
Fair enough. But, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. was phenomenal with the Mariners up till 29 years old. And then he had a phenomenal year 30 season with the Reds when he drove in 118, hit 40 bombs, and hit 271. But then, okay, 2001, played 111 games, started getting hurt, hit 286, 22 homers. Then the year after that, 2002, 70 games. He hit 264, 8 home runs. 2003, plays in 53 games. Middle of his career here now, 247, hit 13, 247, hit 13 homers, drove in 26. His year 34, like this should be like the back end of your prime, 253 with 20 homers and 60 RBIs. I mean, these aren't even all-star numbers. And yet, he's the highest vote-getter in the history of baseball. Not to have a weird bother on Ken Griffey Jr., who doesn't get talked a lot about in the city, even though he had a cup of coffee with the White Sox when he was 38 years old. But that's the guy that's got the most unanimous percentage?
He was beloved by everybody.
Clearly.
Players, opposing players, coaches, opposing coaches. The writers loved them. The broadcasters loved them. And then you look at the big numbers, 630 home runs, 1,800-plus RBIs, the OPS 900. He had 13 All-Star appearances, 10 Gold Glove awards. Most of his numbers, you're right, were pounded in that 10-year window because he came up when he was 19 in 89. Through that 29 season in Seattle, he was popping out 40 home runs a year, driving in 100 runs a year, scoring 100 runs pretty much every year. But
he was basically a dog for the Reds.
I wouldn't say a dog. He put some weight on, and then he had some injury problems.
He got fat. He got hurt.
I remember reading those reports about those Reds dugouts with Adam Dunn and Ken Griffey with their backwards hats and their home run derby swings and their beer bellies. I remember those stories out of Cincinnati that the work ethic wasn't there for that squad.
Until he turned 37, he went, this were his games. His first year he played 145 games. He had a very good season. Then 111, 70, 53, 83, 128, 109. He was hurt, which I understand that, okay, you don't want to fault him for getting hurt, but you can't. This is the guy? This is number one of all time? That when he went to Cincinnati, that was supposed to be like the greatest thing ever. He was basically, I mean, he was a huge disappointment in Cincy.
Yes. That's
okay, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
All right, Bob Nightingale from USA Today. What's going on with the trade rumors? Are the Cubs going to make any more moves? What's he hearing with Chris Sale and the White Sox? He's next, 720 WGN.
I get to be on stage with a whole lot of people that have set a bar, and only a few get to join. So it'll be quite interesting because I'm going to be a rookie again. And hopefully they don't tease me too much.
That is Ken Griffey Jr. going into baseball's Hall of Fame tomorrow. Cooperstown. Bob Nightingale, one of the best at covering the game of baseball, does it for USA Today, MLB Network Insider, and he joins us now on 720 WGN. Bob, we've been creating a Chris Sale to the Cubs deal. I have some fine pieces to send over if I'm Theo Epstein, and I've been playing it out here with my partner Sam Panionovich as he's been Rick Hahn. He wants Chris Bryant. I've been unwilling to do that. But there are some pieces that would make sense here. I don't think it's going to happen. But do you see the White Sox being aggressive in any shape or way? Because I know you hear what's going on. What are you hearing about what's going on the south side of Chicago?
Well, obviously a very frustrating season. And I think, you know, all about four guys are really up for sale. I mean, they're not going to. I do not believe in any way they would ever trade Chris Sale, who I think has more trade value than any player in baseball, considering his talent in a club-friendly contract. I mean, if you're ever going to win, you need this guy, and he's, you know, he's still in his prime. I could see Quintana, you know, being possibly moved. I can't see Rodon being traded, or Tim Anderson. But I think anybody else is up for grabs.
Bob, I just picture that thought of the White Sox helping the Cubs out, and I know it's probably never going to happen, but, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf signing off on a trade that would send Chris Sale to the Cubs, that would never, ever happen, would it?
No, it never would. I mean, better chance of us being elected president, beating out Trump and Clinton, knowing the White Sox front office and Jerry Reinsdorf or anything else, I don't care if the Cubs traded back their entire franchise, they would never send a player to go help out the Cubs.
Hey, Bob, what are you hearing about Theo Epstein's negotiation with Tom Ricketts? I mean, Theo always says they have a great rapport, great relationship, and they'll get it done. I mean, if Andrew Friedman's worth $7 million a year to run the L.A. Dodgers, I mean, what is Theo Epstein worth? I mean, I almost argue that he'd be worth double. The guy's, you know, he won three Worlds, or helped get three World Series, at least to Boston, was there for two, and now look what he's done with the Cubs. I mean, come on.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the point of contention right there is Andrew Friedman. Now, it's been widely reported that he got a, you know, five-year, $35 million contract for the Dodgers. People in the know that have seen the contract said that's wrong. It's actually 5 years for $50 million. So that's the thing. You know, the Cubs want to make Theo the highest paid executive. But what, you know, what is the highest paid now? Is it 35 or is it 50? I think it's 50. I think Theo believes it's 50. So I think that's the only thing holding up. It's just, you know, when he's the highest, where does it go? Does it go in the mid-50s or go in the mid-40s?
Bob Nightingale, MLB columnist for USA Today with us on 720 WGN. Saw you at Wrigley early in the week. You were there for a little Cubs and Mets action. You've got the national perspective on it. You're not there every day, but when you were here, Bob, at Wrigley, can you paint a picture of the ball club, starting with the manager down, what this team means this year for this Cubs fandom?
Well, just, you know, it's a, you know, virtually flawless. I mean, they've had some bullpen hiccups, you know, and they got Mike Montgomery should help that. You know, if they could get their, you know, hands on Andrew Miller, they do that in a heartbeat just to kind of sew the thing up. But, you know, they get so many versatile players. You know, doing this without Schwarber, too. The fact that Arrieta started off strong after the break, Lester's still doing great. You know, the no problem in the rotation. So, you know, they have, you know, the best chance of any team in baseball to reach the World Series, and that's why they're favorites. And they should remain favorites. I just don't think there's any team that's really equipped to stay with them. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the Nationals and the San Francisco Giants. But both those teams have to make some trades to stay with the Cubs.
Bob Nightingale, USA Today. Okay, well, the Giants have lost, what is it now, six in a row, and I guess, you know, whatever long season, small sample size doesn't really matter. But in what I'm going to is, the Yankees are playing well right now. You're talking about Miller coming over, and then I think a lot of Cub fans would like to see Aroldis Chapman here closing out games, you know, in down the stretch here. You can't do better than that. What's your sense on what Brian Cashman and the Yankees are going to do?
Well, I think Chapman's, I don't care how many games the Yankees win, will definitely be gone. He's a free agent, you know, at the end of the season. They got him for pretty much nothing, so they're going to make a killing trade-wise. And you still got Chapman and Betances in the bullpen. So you're set there in relief. And who wants to pay, you know, $15, $16 million for a closer anyway? So I think he's gone. And we'll see about Beltran, who's also a free agent. I think Miller, you know, someone really have to knock the doors off. You know, just like the talk of Schwarber. You know, they would do it for Schwarber in a heartbeat. The Cubs won't do that. They're not going to send Chapman and Miller to the Cubs for Schwarber. That's not going to happen. So, I just think the Yankees will kind of retool, but not completely overhaul the team.
What do you think Schwarber's value is? I mean, what could Schwarber bring on his own?
He could bring Chapman on his own. He couldn't bring Miller on his own. But the trouble with Chapman is that, you know, if the Cubs have a big lead here, and they're going to win this division no matter what. So you don't need Chapman to win the division. You need Chapman in October. So you really want to give up a huge, costly piece for a guy who might pitch, you know, maximum, you know, 9 games in October. You know, you're not going to do that. At least with Miller, you're down for 2.5 years. But the Cubs won't even, you know, give up Schwarber for that. So he's a guy, I mean, everybody loves, you know, his hitting stroke and everything else. Very questionable when he can get a catch again. Obviously, left field is a little shaky. But just his makeup and character, you know, the Cubs are completely fall in love with.
Who's the best player that'll be traded by August 1st, do you think, across baseball? Any big names that'll shock us?
I don't think it's a shocking name. I don't. You know, I think the best would either be a Jonathan Lucroy from the Brewers or a Jay Bruce from Cincinnati Reds.
So a down year as far as sexy headlines for the trade market.
Yeah. Nothing like a year ago. I mean, last year you had David Price, Cole Hamels, Johnny Cueto. You know, nothing like that. You know, who knows? Maybe the best player traded would be Todd Frazier. You know, Frazier might be better than both those guys, so he might be the best guy traded.
Hey, Bob, what do you think about baseball trying to – they want to speed the game up. This is Rob Manfred is having a meltdown weekly here. First, they want more balls in play, so they want to raise the strike zone from the bottom of the knee to the top of the knee with the idea that there will be more balls in play. And now earlier this week, Rob Manfred said that, hey, maybe we should consider limiting the amount of relievers you can use in a game. So the relievers are just too good, and we want to create offense late in the game so people aren't just watching strikeouts in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning. Does that have any legs? Is that real?
No, you can't do that. I mean, one way to stop that is, you know, get the roster in at 25 and limit it so that a reliever can't pitch 3 or 4 days in a row. And I think where baseball's concern is, someone told me it's like 75 or 80% where somebody has a lead after the seventh inning, they win. So I think their concern is just a lack of action. I mean, we're seeing home runs hit a better rate now since 2000. Strikeouts are all-time high. And walks are way up too. So there's a lot of inaction going on. I mean, it's either a home run, walk, or nothing.
My partner doesn't think that Ken Griffey had the best career or the best conditioning after the age of 30. And if you look at the numbers, Bob, there were a lot of down years in Cincy. He didn't play all that many games some seasons. The power numbers were down. But this guy is a surefire Hall of Famer. How would you summarize Ken Griffey Jr.'s career? No, let him
wait, hold
paint
on.
It.
Before,
because you said after 29, like, he was kind of a bust.
But before you answer, Bob, all I'm saying is I don't think that Ken Griffey Jr. should be the highest percentage vote getter in the history of Cooperstown. I don't think he warrants that. But I think Bob's going to be with me on this. Go ahead, Bob.
No, I mean, you can't say Ken Griffey Jr. should get more votes than Babe Ruth or, you know, Hank Aaron or Willie Mays, so I agree with you there. I think just the vote total is because he was beloved. And just a guy kind of made everybody happy and, he became so popular in commercials, the backwards hat, the smile, and everything else. And he was a guy who was almost like, hey, you played the hard at steroid era, but nobody ever talked about him with steroids at all. It was, to pretty much everybody else. So I think that's why. But you're right about leaving Seattle. I mean, even he said today, do I regret going to Cincinnati? He said, no. But do I wish things were different? He goes, yes. He had a lot of injury plague seasons. And there was always questions about, you know, he was so devoted to the family and doing things. I don't think he spent those hours in the gym like a lot of other guys did.
I assume you agree that the writer should continue to be the gateway to Cooperstown?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, if there's ever a mistake or people don't agree, there's going to be a veterans committee and different committees formed if there was a mistake made. Like, I do believe Jack Morris was a mistake. I firmly believe he should be in the Hall of Fame, and I hope that's corrected. I like the way it is.
Do you have a vote, Bob?
I do.
Okay. Now, are you a guy that, like, hey, I'll vote for you in year three, but I won't vote for you in year one?
No. The only way I wouldn't vote for a guy in year one is if my ballot's full. There's so many guys that deserve in the Hall of Fame now. It used to be you vote for 2-3 guys. Now my ballot's full with 10 guys. So I haven't voted for, say, Mike Mussina yet, or I'm trying to think of the Jeff Kent. I believe both are Hall of Famers, but each have not had room in the ballot. And one of my reasons is I vote for the guys with the steroid allegations and those sort of things, just because they play in the era. And I say, hey, you vote for the best guys of that era, because everybody was doing something back then. It's just a matter of who got caught.
So you think Sammy should be a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, I used to vote for Sammy every year. Same reason. I mean, let's face it, Mike Piazza's in the Hall of Fame. I mean, there were more suspicions involving Mike Piazza than any player who ever played a game of baseball. You know, Sammy never failed drug tests, and over 600 home runs and great for baseball. So, yeah, I'd vote for him for sure.
And the last elephant in the room, Bob, we appreciate your time here on WGN. I always have to ask about Pete Rose. I don't know what your opinion is, but I have this vision of him being put in, but, you know, he's no longer breathing when they finally put him in. Like, he goes posthumously.
I'm with you in there. I don't think they trust Pete Rose. I think if he got in, they're afraid of what he would do or what he'd say. And I do think he will get in the Hall of Fame. But, yeah, I don't think he'll ever be alive to see it.
Okay.
Bob, appreciate the time. As always, continued success and great work to you. And thanks for jumping on WGN.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
All right, Bob Nightingale, USA Today.
I can't say that word, posthumously.
Yeah, I don't know what
you said. Posthumously? I don't know.
Posthumously.
I can spell it. Who was? I can't say it.
One more time, Bob.
Kessler.
Posthumously.
Posthumously. I kind of just sizzled through that word.
Sizzle through everything.
Accuracy in how you speak is overrated in radio. You can just...
At least he agreed that Pete Rose is getting in after he croaks.
I like that Bob wouldn't go was repping Sammy there. Not everyone's repping Sammy these days. I'm a Sammy guy. You know why? It was fun. It was a lot of fun. People get real hyped on that. Time to take sides. Watch the Chicago Cubs battle the Chicago White Sox for the Crosstown Cup next Tuesday through Thursday on WGN-TV, where Chicago's very own play. Quick timeout. We'll get you into the 4:30 news, and then I have a major personal issue that I need your help with. 720 WGN. Good news, Cub fans. Or Joe Nathan fan specifically, he'll be with the club on Sunday. New addition to the bullpen, Joe Nathan. Rehabbing and low-risk option. All right, I got a major personal issue here, Sam.
Yeah.
So, and it's rare that I feel a little bit uncomfortable talking about family issues on the air, but my brother, my sister-in-law, and my niece have all headed out to Seattle for a week. And they have selected me after numerous candidates.
I was going to say, where were you on the pecking order?
I mean, I had to go through a massive screening test because they asked who was going to take care of six-month-old Luna the dog. And Luna the dog is a Labradoodle.
You are far from a dog whisperer, too.
I consider myself... kind of, I'm not going to say a dog expert, but when I did the Jack Tripper lifestyle in my 20s, me and two beautiful women, Amy and Kate, we had Belle the dog. And nobody took care of Belle the dog more than I did. Belle and I bonded. But Belle was a black lab and was incredibly well trained. Like, you could go out on the sidewalk on School Avenue where I lived, and you could throw the ball, and if it went into the street, Belle would just sit there at the curb and just look at the ball and, like, look back at you and,
hey, you're going to go get it.
You're going to come get that ball. And I'm like, Belle the dog, you're incredible. Luna the dog would not do such a thing. So Luna the dog is...
Luna seems to be a rather fit name for this dog.
Well, this is a Labradoodle, and what I've learned apparently is that Labradoodles have poodle in them, and they're neurotic. This dog has got some neuroses. So
is this dog a Gemini too?
I don't know what that means.
I can only imagine, like the horoscopes, like Gemini. It's said that Gemini are crazy because they're two different people.
Well, I don't know Luna's birthday, so...
Well, you should ask her next time you see her.
Okay. Well, so Luna... By the way, I'll tweet out a picture of Luna at the Carm coming up here. Beautiful Luna. So Luna gets dropped off last night. The brother comes over. The sister-in-law comes over.
Her brother and sister-in-law or your brother and
sister-in-law? My brother and sister-in-law. They drop off the dog. 30 minutes after the dog is... I'm sitting there watching Cub baseball. 30 minutes after the family leaves, the dog is at the door just whimpering. I'm like, you got to go out? I think you're good, but maybe we can go out. I open up the door. She sees that brother-in-law and sister are not there, and it's just pure depression.
Free-for-all.
Right.
It's a free-for-all of emotion.
So this morning, when I get up to take her out, you know, I'm saying you want to go outside, all that stuff. I get all excited, want to go outside. I open up the door. Luna goes tail between the legs, dig into the carpet, and I live on a second floor of a three flat, and will not go down the stairs. I have to pick the dog up, carry it down to get her outside. I'm like, we're going outside. You want to go outside. You're a dog. This is an exciting moment in your day. This is the best part of your day. And then same thing before I came to work here. One more takeout. I got to carry her down the stairs.
The dog doesn't like you.
So, okay.
It's clear. The dog can't stand you.
All right. I need two things here. What's going on and how do I get through this? 312-981-7200.
Step number one, put some raw bacon in your pocket.
Raw bacon in the pocket? I had treats. I went back deck. She wouldn't go out the front door, so I went to the back deck. She was terrified of the back deck, too.
Raw bacon in your pocket will satisfy a lot of things.
I mean, I do actually have some bacon at home. I could go raw bacon.
I had a buddy who he knew that this girl he was trying to woo was a dog owner. And this dog was a very aggressive dog and didn't like a lot of strangers. He went to her house to pick her up on their first date and he put a piece of bacon in his pocket, knowing full well that the dog's sense of smell would pick up on it and the dog would love him. And it worked out. Swear.
So your guy strategized that if the dog loves me, then
it's
then
universal the girls, love because right. The magnetic field of the love from the dog kind of spreads.
Okay. Well, I mean, I feel like there's got to be a strategy to how do you get the dog to be willing to go down the stairs? Because listen, during the week, I get up in the morning. I got to be at work at 8 a.m. I can't be messing around for.
It can't take you an hour to take the dog.
Right. And I got to come back from work, take him out at lunch. How do you get the dog down the stairs without having to lift her up? Because I feel like I'm going to get bit too. Like at some point, she's not going to like it. 312-981-7200. And the other thing is like my other option is maybe I just go and back to my brother's place and stay there. If you're going to be this unwilling to go down the stairs, I can't live my life this way.
The worst is when you get the opportunity to watch a dog that hasn't been neutered. And also doesn't, like, ever leave the house. And you have to watch that dog who's bouncing, ping-ponging around the walls, and then they start humping the chair. You know, it's awful. Because they're not trained well, and there's a lot of, if it's a male dog that doesn't get out and around, there's a lot of pent-up stuff for that dog. That's the worst dog-sitting opportunity.
Well, and that's the other thing.
That's the worst.
I'm on the couch last night. I don't think that my 872 texting and call Steve Dale. I don't want to call Steve Dale. We might call Steve Dale, but I'd rather talk to an amateur, somebody who's in the trenches with me here. We don't need a professional. 312-981-7200.
That's a great tagline for this program. We don't need a professional. Well, we need an amateur.
I want to know what maybe we'll get Steve on the line. But
hey, Mark.
yeah. You're screwed. Okay, that's the other thing, too. I don't know what their rules are, but I'm watching the baseball game last night. She keeps on running up to me and wanted to, you know, give me a little love of the face. I'm like, listen, why don't you just hop up on this couch, take a little siesta, and let's watch the baseball. I don't think she's allowed on the couch, but she gets on the couch, sits there peacefully, puts her head on my leg, and is just legit focused in on Cubs Brewers baseball.
You've got to think about what the dog wants more than anything else. And most times,
okay, but
it's treats. It's raw bacon in your pocket, Mark Carmen. Do it today. Put it in a Ziploc bag, tuck it in your pocket, see what happens.
Dog comes out of the condo. Dog doesn't want to go down the stairs. Got to pick up the dog. How do you get the dog downstairs? Save my life.
Bacon everywhere.
312-981-7200. I don't think a treat will work, but I think that's Lori's advice here. Lori, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Lori.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call, guys. By the way, yes, treats will work because they start training dogs. First of all, does your brother have stairs in his home?
He does, but he doesn't have...
Okay.
It's one of those town home that's got like three flights of stairs. The dog will run up the stairs on the way back in, although I do have to give a little bit of a tug.
Okay, but then what you can do is take a treat, put it in front of their nose, put it, and then show it down towards the next step, put it there, and then you can do the same thing with another treat on the other stair. Put it in front of their nose and say, step down or down, which is you want them to walk down. It's a command.
Lori.
And then you praise them.
Okay, but Lori, here, jump in here with me. It's Monday morning. I got to be at work at 8. I'm waking up. I don't have one step at a time to go down with this animal. Like we got to
hit the dance floor.
You got to get a little bit earlier because it's intimidated. And if you work on it in the evening, even just for fun, you have to play with it. So if you like work with it when you get home, do it, you know, do it for 5-10 minutes, break away, and then come back and do it again. It's repetition, and it's praise, and you're giving them a treat.
Lori, I've seen Mark try and untie his shoes. Not a pretty sight. You know, he gets like one way through, and then he just gives up and throws the shoe out. So I don't think the patience is where it should be.
So, okay.
Have him sit on the stairs and go one step with the dog down the stairs.
Okay, well, Lori, I appreciate the advice here. Thank you very much. Thanks for making the call.
You're very welcome.
All right, 312-981-7200, 773 texting. And the dog is a puppy. It's scared in general. I hope it has peed on your pillow. That's funny, but not very nice. And there's the other thing too. When my brother and sister-in-law and niece are out, they put the dog in the crate. I feel like the dog should just be able to run around. Is that a bad thing?
You're doing a terrible job. 312-981-7200. Darlene, I think, is on the money here. Hi, Darlene. Welcome to the Beat.
Hi. My advice is move back in the home where the dog lives because this poor dog has been taken away from its home. And all the people he loves are gone. So the dog is totally confused. It's living in a new place with a new person, has new rules and scary stairs. And so I think the best thing for you is go, if it's not...
Find
too
a realtor, apparently. Get a realtor.
What?
I was like, get Mark needs yeah, a new realtor with some better stairs.
Hold on a second here, Darlene. It's a dog. Like, first of all, the dog does know me. We've hung out before. I mean, the dog's following me around the condo all day long. He's smiling. He seems happy. Last time I checked, I thought that all the dogs really cared about was, when am I eating? When do I get to go outside? And, I've got a cool place to sleep.
But this dog has been somewhere else for probably 4 months.
Yeah, that's right.
And it got used to that. First it was at a breeder, probably. Then it goes to a new home, has all these wonderful new people. Now they've left him, and now he's left his house that he knows. Dog is totally confused.
So you're siding with comfort. You're saying comfort is everything, Darlene.
No, I'm saying you want a happier dog. I'd move in there, and the dog has rules in its house. And it'll be happier there than trying to teach it new rules at your place. And stairs are scary to dogs.
Why?
Try looking down a bunch of stairs.
Okay.
Try looking down 80 stairs or something. Why is it? They're just different stairs.
Okay.
That's why they're scared. Okay, we had a rescue dog, and it was a Shetland Sheepdog, and they bark all the time. But this one didn't bark, and I asked, what's wrong with this dog? It doesn't bark. And they said it's grieving. And it'll take 6 months. And at 6 months, the Sheltie started barking.
All right.
And so that's what I'm saying. It's grieving.
This dog's barking, so we're not in that.
You're not at that part.
We're not at that part.
The dog is sad. All the people are gone, and the house is gone, everything. Poor thing. We'll have fun.
Thank you, Darlene. Appreciate you.
It's a nice breed.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
I would like to counter one thing that Darlene said. There's nothing more challenging than walking up your case of stairs at like 2 in the morning on a Friday night. She talked about walking down the stairs. Walking up the stairs sometimes can be a challenge for some.
See, okay, I'm not satisfied. We're going to continue this for one more segment. If you're on hold, please stay there. If you'd like to join the show, 312-981-7200.
Hang on, Donna. Donna's got a great response for you.
Okay, this is 720 WGN. Back in two. I also want to know, what is the long-term ramifications if I don't leave the dog in the crate when I'm gone? When his family comes back next Monday, I've got the dog for a week. We'll have an update on the beat next weekend. I know you're excited about that, Sam. I'm not really worried. Like, what's the dog going to do? Eat my couch? Because he was gnawing on some pillows last night.
He's got some great texts. Hey, Carmen, I will babysit your dog in my house for some pizza gift cards. Come to Albany Park.
I live by Albany Park. That would be convenient. I can't do that, though.
630 Mark, get a stuffed dog.
Not going stuffed dog. I do have a stuffed duck. That's my
847 Lori, get a dog walker.
See,
and
that's the other thing. Like, if you get a dog walker,
then you're out money too. Money and time. And then 214, threaten to trade the dog for a younger starter. That should do it.
You wanted to talk to Donna, 312-981-7200. If you're just joining 720 WGN, I'm taking care of my brother, sister-in-law, and their niece's dog.
Poorly taking care of it.
I think I'm doing a great job. We're on the second floor of a three flat. The dog won't go down the stairs. The dog needs to be picked up to go out. I want to know how I can do better here. And I also am kind of curious, if I don't put the dog in the crate when I'm gone and just allow the dog to rule of the roost and just let him have a nice, peaceful time on the couch or whatever he's going to do, will that make him feel more comfortable quicker? Hope they're not listening in Seattle. Donna, you are on 720 WGN. What's up, Donna?
Hi, how are you?
We're good, Donna.
Well, I got a question for you. I used to have to carry my 93-pound Rhodesian Ridgeback down the stairs.
Because
at the time, I only weighed 110 pounds and was only 5'4".
That's a serious return on investment.
Why did you have to carry her down the stairs?
Because she was afraid to go down the stairs as well.
Just fear.
So this dog was 17 pounds lighter than you were?
Yes.
And Mark, how heavy is your dog, your brother's dog?
It's 40 pounds tops.
40 pounds?
Maybe 30.
And you weigh how much?
173.2 pounds as of yesterday.
So by Donna math, you should be fine. Just quit complaining and pick the dog up.
Yeah.
All right.
Are you with me, Donna? That's what it sounds like.
I feel like I'm cheating the dog's growth.
That's exactly what it sounds like.
I agree.
I used to do this for 6 months. And then finally, she went down the stairs by herself because I was heading up and somebody was in the basement and they came and started yelling at me and she thought I was being threatened. So she ran down the stairs herself to protect me.
Well, that's beautiful. Good job, Donna. You're better at this than I am. Just know that. If you haven't figured that out already, thank you for the call. 312-981-7200 773. I find it odd and disturbing that you haven't mentioned the dog's name.
Luna.
The dog's name is Luna, and I definitely mentioned Luna.
You mentioned it in the first segment. You didn't mention it since we rejoined the conversation.
The dog's name is Luna. Hashtag Luna the dog. Carrie, 720
yes,
W. Yes, Carrie.
I think maybe Luna's afraid to go because she relates the apartment that your place to where her owners left her last. So maybe she doesn't want to leave because that's where she wants them to come back to her. So she's reluctant to go out.
Ooh.
But she's happy to go back in.
Ooh.
Maybe if you cajole her, come on, it's okay, and put a good strong harness on and help her down.
I have been doing some good cajoling. I give myself an A in cajoling.
Okay, now call Steve Dale.
Okay.
And that, I think the crates are supposed to be their comfort zones, aren't they? Like being in a crate. That's what I've been told, but I never did crate training.
Yeah, no, she. This dog goes right into that crate. There's no problem. So that's accurate, at least as far as Luna the dog is concerned. Thank you, Carrie.
Okay, thanks.
All right, 6-3-0 texting. This is very sad that people who own the dog should never have left it with you. You have no clue how to handle the poor thing when he's been totally displaced. That's a shame, and it's the fault of the people who owned the dog. They let you take care of it. And I use take care of very loosely. Very, very sad, and this is obviously miserable for the poor dog.
Hard to find anything to argue with there. I've got nothing.
What have I done wrong there, 630? I'm on the radio trying to make this dog's life better, and I've lifted the dog down the stairs so it can go out. What have I done wrong? Jeez, Jackie, 720.
Hi, how's it going?
Go ahead.
I have a couple of solutions. So, is it a very nervous dog?
Yes.
What kind of dog is it?
Labradoodle. Full schizo.
Oh, yeah. Those dogs are high anxiety. I used to be a dog wrangler, and I would go to people's houses, pick up their dogs, and we would run off-leash with these dogs, like 30 dogs in a giant pen outside in the woods.
Wait a minute. You buried the lead here. You used to be a dog wrangler? How does one become...
A dog wrangler.
Are there internships for this? How does this materialize?
No, it's like a full-time job. It was this woman in Rhode Island owned this company, and we drove these giant Honda Element trucks that had the back seats were ripped out, and we piled in like 10 or 15 dogs per truck, and then we rode out to like a plot of land that was fenced in, and the dogs were like off leash the whole time.
That's fascinating. Yeah. So just real quick, we've got to hit a timeout real quick. What is your quick solution to help Mark get Luna down the stairs without, God forbid, he pulls a back muscle?
Two solutions. One, sometimes not having them on a leash just to get down the stairs helps them like run faster. They don't feel nervous. They don't get tied down.
Okay.
That might help.
I could do that.
Two, if you have a long set of stairs, is it like wooden and slippery?
Nope, it's carpet.
It's carpet? Okay, that was going to be my other solution. They sometimes feel like they're going to fall, so if it's like carpeted stairs, that would be another good way to keep it going.
So
but yeah, try off-leash. That might help.
So I go, no leash, just throw a treat down the stairs and be like, go get it.
Well, you should also be at the bottom of the stairs.
I should be at the bottom. Okay, all right.
And then tell to come.
All right, thank you, Jackie.
Good luck.
Appreciate you.
And the bacon in your pockets.
Yeah. Steve Dale is on hold, but we are late for the news, so maybe Steve will hang on until after the news. I'm hoping that he will. We're going to talk to a professional to finally solve this thing.
Let's do it.
720 WGN.
Coach Green, you know, he was the one thing he did not want to do, and every man ever coached by him professionally would know this. He didn't want to take any money from you. He didn't fine. Coach Green was not about fining. You know, one thing he'll tell you, he said, I'll cut you, but I won't find you. So that really sent volume, spoke volumes about him as a man, that you work hard for your money. I'm not here to take it, but when you're here with me, we're going to work.
That is one of the greatest wide receivers to ever play the game, Randy Moss, who played for Dennis Green up in Minnesota. Denny Green passed away earlier this week, 67 years old, head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, famous for the meltdown. The Bears are who we thought they were. But Denny Green, he was the second African-American head coach in the history of the NFL after Art Shell with the Oakland Raiders. And people locally should remember Denny Green. I mean, I was 10 years old in the Northwestern Wildcats, who were 20 minutes from my house growing up. We're on a 34-game losing streak, the longest ever in Division I. They were outscored in 1981, 505-82, and then they finally ended it by beating Northern Illinois 31-6, and Denny Green was the head coach of that team. Chris Hinton was an outstanding offensive lineman for that team, who, of course, was drafted in the NFL and famously traded for John Elway, and now joining us on WGN for as we give a little...
That's all they got back?
I know. It's good.
Should have got two Elways.
Hey, Chris.
How's it going, guys?
Chris, we appreciate you taking time. And, hey, I mean, it ain't like you were chopped liver. I mean, seven Pro Bowls, six with Indianapolis. I mean, most times you make a trade, you're going to get a seven-time Pro Bowler, six with the club trading them. That's not too bad. So you had a phenomenal career yourself. What's your number on memories of Denny Green? Because you were a Wildcat in 79. So Denny came in the middle of your career, and you guys were in a massive losing streak, and here's this guy, Dennis Green, who's going to try to turn it around.
Right. Well, personally, I've got, tons of history with Denny. I don't know how much time you guys have. But
Till seven.
I mean, I mean, there are some great stories. One was when he came in 81 and me going into my junior year and being in the middle of, you know, one of the longest losing streaks in the history of college football. He had to change the whole thought process, the whole culture at Northwestern. And I mean, that which was a monumental task, especially for a 31-year-old. People forget that, I mean, Denny was 31 when he became the head coach in Northwestern.
Wow.
But I think one of the things that sticks out in my mind personally was, you know, to be honest with you, I got caught up in that whole losing mentality and didn't take the game serious. And I came in for camp my junior year, and we had to run the mile running. And needless to say, I didn't do well. And he sent me home. And I was surprised, and so was the rest of the team, because I was considered one of the better players on the team. And for him to send me home, and when I did come back, I sat down with him, and I'll never forget, sat down, looked at him, you know, across the table and the desk, and he said, you become part of the problem, and you're wasting your time here. I can help you transfer. I'm good friends with John Robinson at SC, and I can help you transfer, and where you would understand what it's like to be a winner. And it just blew me away. I was like, hey, I'm good. I like Northwestern. It's close to home. I want to stay. And so it was basically him being a motivator. You know, people say, oh, you know, was he a father figure to you? And I immediately say, no, he was a coach. He was a guy who motivated, inspired, led. And I mean, he definitely changed. I mean, I would say with me, not only myself, but just generations from this point on. I mean, he was that big of a factor in my life.
Chris, you had him as a head coach when he was at Northwestern, when you played for the Wildcats. But when I think of Denny Green big picture, I think of a pioneer for black men to be head coaches in the NFL, because, you know, he was one of the first ones, and he did it with a lot of success, that 98 season with the Vikings, one of the best of all time. But he opened the door for a lot of people to get to places that maybe they couldn't have gotten to 10, 20 years earlier.
No question about it. And you look at his staff, and when I played, because I, you know, I was fortunate to play for him professionally with the Vikings, and I mean the likes of Tony Dungy, and I mean people that he reached back to pull up, and I mean, and not that Tony needed to be pulled up, but just the idea of him understanding that. He stood on some shoulders, and he wanted to make sure that other guys got opportunities, because people don't realize that he was, you know, the first African-American coach, head coach in the Big Ten, first in the Pac-10 at Stanford, and then again, I believe he was the second in the NFL. And so he was definitely a trailblazer, and I was fortunate to cross paths with him.
I think Art Shell, the first Black coach, and then Denny Green with the
Raiders.
Arshel, yeah.
Chris Hinton
was the first, and Denny was the second.
Yeah,
and Art was in a terrible situation with the Raiders. They just it was hard to win football games there. So just Denny having the success that he did was huge. Chris Hinton's with us, 7-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All Pro with the Colts and the Falcons, and then caught up with Denny back in the NFL with the Minnesota Vikings. So. That's what
Mark,
you did. Yes, David?
Real quick, we now have a severe thunderstorm warning in effect for Cook County until 7:13 this evening. Just wanted to get that in.
Yeah, thank you, David Jennings, up in the newsroom monitoring the weather. What you just said, Chris, about your story with Denny as far as, hey, I'll help you transfer to USC. What's cool about that to me is you're considered probably the best player on the team, but he's trying to look out for you and not look out for himself. That's huge.
Yeah, and I think he was making a statement. He was like, if you want to stay, you got to buy in. If not, I can help you so you can see what it's like. And me deciding to stay, and that following year, we sat down, and he said, I'm going to move you to offensive line. I'd never played offensive line in my whole football, short career. But he moved me as a senior. And he said, he looked me in the eye and said, hey, you can be a first-round pick, which, I didn't believe him. I bought in.
Okay. I mean, I should have known that, Chris. I didn't know that you were playing on the D-line and then flipped over. Now, I was a 9-year-old. I could have done better. That's interesting.
The fact that that's one of his strong traits was that he was able to evaluate talent and project talent. And he did that with the Vikings. He did that in recruiting. He did that with guys on the team. And for me, I played tight end. I played linebacker. I was on the D-line at some. And my senior year, he honestly sat down and told me, I'm going to move you to offensive line, and I know the direction. And this was a whole blindside thing that was going on at the time, in that NFL teams are looking for more athletic tackles. And he knew that from his time being with the 49ers and having experience in the NFL. And he told me, I'm going to move you. You can be a first-round pick, which I didn't believe him. I thought he was phasing me out, as new coaches do sometimes with players that play for previous coaches. But, I went from, I played offensive line 1 year and was the fourth player chosen, the first offensive lineman chosen. And that was his vision. And like I said, it was just me buying in. A guy who had the vision, and he was a great offensive mind.
So Denny made you a lot of dough.
Yeah, that's true. Chris, I want to ask you about your alma mater, not collegiately, at the high school level. I'm sure you're well aware, Phillips finally brought home that state title this past fall. Great high school.
Right.
Have you been back to Pershing and King Drive anytime?
I haven't been back recently, but very aware of what was going on, and very proud of the fact that that's a situation that's come a long way. I mean, there's a lot of history, and to be able to accomplish that was awesome.
I did have to ask as well, what was Brett Favre like as a rookie in Atlanta? Because you guys were teammates with the Falcons in the 90s, early 90s.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I know that sometimes the Falcon front office has gotten some bad a bad rep for trading him, but I thought that they overreached and got a first round pick for him. I would have been happy with the fifth round pick for him. I mean, the guy was he was not the Brett Favre that we all know.
He was
today.
Reckless, right? He didn't care.
I mean. He was the only guy that knew that he was good.
It's a good way to put it.
Well, I guess sometimes that's all that matters. If you have that confidence, that swag, I don't care what you see Chris hitting. I'm going to go dominate up in Green Bay. Fifth round pick, first round pick. They should trade 3 first rounders for me.
I'm going to throw it hard. I don't know who I'm throwing it to, but I'm going to throw it hard at him.
Exactly. I'll never forget. I mean, as a rookie, and at that time, I think I was in my eighth or ninth year, and had gotten 7 Pro Bowls, and he comes up to me and he said, "Hey, I don't know why I'm not starting. I've got the best arm in the NFL," and I looked at him like he had 4 eyes. So, like I said, he knew something that I didn't know, or a lot of people didn't know.
If they're redrafting the 1983 draft where you went fourth overall of the Broncos and then traded to the Colts for John Elway, you had Elway. This draft is just ridiculous. I mean, Jimbo Covert, Hall of Famer, Eric Dickerson is in this draft. Jim Kelly, Tony Eason. The Bears, by the way, for Bears fans, that was Willie Gault, who, I by the way, did win a Super Bowl here. And then you had Dan Marino, 27th to the Miami Dolphins. If Chris Hinton's drafting and you're going to play with one of those two for his career, Marino or Elway, who you taking?
Wow. I'm a Marino guy. I mean, he's a guy who hit the ground running. And people don't realize that Elway struggled, I mean, early on. And Dan, I mean, he hit the ground running. But, you know, that's six one way, half dozen the other, and both phenomenal quarterbacks.
Yeah. I just don't think – I'm with you. I don't think Marino gets the respect that he deserves because he never won the big one. But the guy was ridiculous and then and never had a running attack. So just want to get that out there.
Yeah, and then – yeah, I think that's a good point. The running game was subpar, and you know, defense was average at best, and it just shows you what a running game and a defense can do for you. You know, when Elway had those pieces in place, and you always look at like Super Bowl, you look at the stats for the quarterback. All right, the winning quarterback, 200 yards passing, you know, 250 yards passing. And it's not like the Mondo 400-yard passing games. It's a running game and the defense that wins championships.
Hey, Chris, before you go, you said you had a ton of stories. Any Denny Green story as we honor 67-year-old Denny Green, passed away earlier this week? Any story you want to tell before you head on out of here?
Probably just I mean, he had tons of quotes. But he always said, plan your work and work your plan. I mean, and it's, you know, simple play, but that was him, and he was a good dude.
Plan your work and work your plan.
Work your plan.
That's called, and dream it big, baby. That's what I'm.
That's it.
Yeah. I'm moving you to offensive line. You're going to be a Pro Bowler.
And you make a lot of money.
And you're going to have a lot of dough, and your life's going to be completely better than you could ever imagine. That's awesome. Hey, congrats on your success playing in the league and everything else, Chris. I know you got vineyards now. According to Wikipedia, you're a wine guy.
Yeah, I'm a wine guy. I've got retail shops here in Atlanta and in the suburb, north suburb of Atlanta. Been doing that for 17 years, and my heart is always will be still is. And I'm a Chicagoan.
So you're more a wine guy than you are football as far as, you know, tenure, right?
Yeah, you know, 17 versus 13. And
oh, it's close.
But, you know, about 5 years after having the store, I was at the grocery store, and I ran into a woman who was a customer. She, you know, she comes up to me. She says, you're I was like, yeah, I'm Chris Hinton. I play for the Falcons. She was like, no, you're the wine guy. So, you know, I'll never forget it. It was that moment where I realized that I moved on.
You're somebody different in everybody's eyes, Chris. You know that.
So right. you wake up on a Saturday morning, you pop open a vino, and you dial up a little Pat Fitzgerald and watch your alma mater go at it. That's the vision that I have for you.
That's it. Go Cats.
All right. Hey, Chris, thanks for taking time. Appreciate you honoring Denny.
All right, you guys. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Chris Hinton, former Northwestern Wildcat, played with Denny Green back in the early 80s when the Wildcats ended their 34-game losing streak. I believe I was there.
That's got to be the highest drafted Wildcat of all time, right? It is. I can't think of anybody. Did Damian Anderson go the first round?
No, I don't think so.
He went fourth overall, Chris Hinton.
Yeah.
Fourth.
Traded for John Elway.
I don't think you'll ever see a Northwestern player go top five again. It's just, it's not the way the landscape is now. They go SEC heavy in the first couple of picks.
You never know what Fitz is cooking up there. Hey, this week on Chicago's Best, Brittany and Elliot, chow down on your favorite Meals on Wheels at Chicago Best Food Truck Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. We'll update anything that's going on with the baseball and Chris Sale coming back on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, 636. Amy Guth is up at 7, Saturday Night Special. And Mark Carmody, Sam Panionovich. Thanks to Chris Hinton formerly of the Northwestern Wildcats, Indianapolis Colts, Atlanta Falcons, Minnesota Vikings, as we did a little tribute to Dennis Green, who was really like the first coach that I ever noticed growing up a young Northwestern Wildcat fan. I was a big fan of Denny Green. 31 years old, a head coach at Northwestern. That's, that's Pat Fitzgerald-esque, right? And that wouldn't have happened for Fitz if Randy Walker had not passed away. So the big news of the day, if you're just joining us, Chris Sale had a meltdown in the clubhouse with a member of White Sox management, was sent home by the team. He was scheduled to start tonight. That start ain't happening. He has been told to leave the stadium, leave U.S. Cellular Field. And the fallout is that, you know, here's a guy in Chris Sale who is a great competitor, wears his heart on his sleeve, but he's got a little bit of a temper that has shown itself over the years, and he's clearly not that responsible with it. I mean, you're not going to send home a guy from the clubhouse unless you really went over the top. I mean, this is like Carlos Zambrano level, minus, you know, physical altercation with a player. I mean, to send somebody home, that's not a little bit of a deal. That's a big deal.
So here's what we know. On Thursday, GM Rick Hahn, White Sox GM Rick Hahn, came out, said the team's been mired in mediocrity, said that, you know, nobody's untouchable, essentially, and that they're listening to offers for everybody, which is what every GM should do, right? That's what they should do no matter what. I think that going vocal, though, and him saying it on Thursday blew everything out of proportion. And Chris Sale is watching television, reading the internet. Agent is talking to him, and he's seeing his name get traded out to Boston, get traded out to L.A., and I think that started to boil up the volcano again. And whatever happened today, which we've been told started out rather silly and minor and so not a big deal, but the argument just continued to accelerate, and it picked up. And what I was told was that somebody in White Sox management forced Chris Sale to go home, think about what he was about to say next, and go sleep on it, and they'll try and resolve something tomorrow. The Sox sent out a statement, said that there is an investigation underway, which is really strange if they're going to do something in-house. The question is, the only one that you could possibly ask from this is, how does this affect the trade stuff going forward?
Yeah, and interestingly, just to add on to that, the first report was that Sale was sick and was sent home. And then different national writers, John Morosi of Fox, were putting it out there that, yeah, I've talked to a couple people, he ain't sick. That's not what's going
on. Yeah, and we said that too right away.
Yeah.
It smelled fishy.
You
said it. The sick thing smelled fishy. It did.
Yeah.
I don't think the guy's been sick in 5 years. I don't think he's missed a start for being sick in 5 years. So that doesn't just happen. You don't just get sick in the middle of an avalanche.
And then, I mean, just judging by the timeline, first comes out sick, people called him on it, reports called him, and then the White Sox realize,
he's not sick.
We're going to go statement and be honest about it. Clubhouse incident. In this city, players of that level that have ever had clubhouse incidents, Sammy Sosa, end of the season, traded. Carlos Zambrano ended up heading out of town. You know, is this the end for Chris Sale on the South Side? Not unless the White Sox get blown over by some deal, in my opinion.
He's had some issues with the temper. That's been something that has been under the radar. They've monitored it. They have been able to control it. But I know that there was a tipping point in spring training with the Drake LaRoche thing. No matter how you feel about it, I thought Drake LaRoche shouldn't have been around. I thought it was stupid. This is grown men. This is baseball. Some player that I won't name, I was told, came into the locker room and was like, what the hell is this? This kid's got a locker. He's got a uniform. He's here every day. That is weird. And I think it's weird, too. But the frustration that Sale let seep out of him when that thing completely tore the roof off, I think that was a turning point for a lot of people in that organization that he is a little bit of a hothead. Maybe they weren't fully aware of that, but they certainly are now, and you've seen another situation like that today.
That was bizarre. If you go back to spring training and get out of our clubhouse, and Drake LaRoche is one of the key guys in here. I actually thought at the time that it was good for the White Sox. You got a lot of stuff on the table, and they came out at the start of the year. They were 23-10. You know, over a month in, they had the second best record in baseball. And I mean, I thought they were going to hang around all season long, but it just didn't turn out that way. And now you've got the best player on the team being sent home, which, by the way, means that his next start, I doubt it'll be tomorrow. He'll have to rethink about this if they don't trade him. It's going to be one of the next 4 days against the Chicago Cubs. You got Cubs and Sox starting Monday night, Tuesday night at the Cell, and then Wednesday and Thursday at Wrigley Field. And I'll give you a public service announcement. If you want to go to the games at Wrigley, I was at the box office the other day, and people were walking up asking for seats, and they had bleachers, and they had field box. They had all sorts of tickets. Now, you got to have money. I mean, the field box ticket for that game is like $180 a seat or something crazy. Can you imagine? Yeah, me and my buddies are going to go out to Cub Sox. It's $180 a ticket. $180. What happens if you go family of four? $800 kick down.
Yeah, that's not even counting the dogs and the Cracker Jacks and the soda.
And that was one thing that we didn't get to on the show today. We can do it coming back here. The Cubs are adding premium seating behind home plate. And they're going to have a 1914's American Airlines Club. So you can go and have your Grey Goose and some prime rib. Maybe a little truffle dessert. Some high-level stuff going on. And then you can go watch your baseball game. It's going to change the feel, man. That's going to change
the feel. There's going to be a lot of empty seats behind home plate. You sort of hinted at that about an hour ago. I wonder how that's going to look on national television when everything behind home plate is empty because, you know, Fabrizio is getting another martini with four olives in it, you know, from Deloitte, you know, what? The accounting chief over at Deloitte is going to get a couple freebies and, you know, he's going to bring his model girlfriend and they're going to watch three innings out of nine.
I mean, a lot of people who have seats in that area have had them for many, many years. And now you're asking them to join this club, pay more money, you know, I and if they don't want to do it, then they're going to have their seats relocated. So change, you know, it's cool that what's going on at Wrigley with all the renovations, but there's also, it's becoming a, not that there aren't great values out there, but there it's becoming a more and more pricey place to be. Which, you know, for some fans, that's unfortunate.
And they are buying up everything.
They are.
I know some friends that own some restaurants down Clark, north of Waveland. We're talking between Grace and Clark. And Tom Ricketts has walked into these buildings, into these establishments, and said, how much do you want? Because they're trying to, it's like you're playing the board game of Monopoly in Wrigleyville. And their goal is to own everything. They want Boardwalk. They want Park Place. They want Marvin Gardens. They want Balmoral. They want all of it. They want all of it.
Can't believe you just referenced Marvin Gardens. That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. We'll update you on Cubbies, who are trailing right now in Milwaukee, coming on back. And there's a little discussion on what Wrigley Field is going to look like going forward, too. Hey, whether it's checkups, sports physicals, or dental and vision screenings, Midwestern University Multi-Specialty Clinic is your family's home for back to school. Located in Downers Grove, they offer a comprehensive patient-centered healthcare experience at their Family Medicine Clinic, Speech Language Institute, Physical Therapy Institute, Dental Institute, and Eye Institute. At their clinics, you'll receive quality care from a team of highly qualified faculty and students. Learn more at MWUClinics.com or call 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Clinic, your family's home for healthcare at 720 WGN. 720 WGN. I'm Mark Carmen. He is Sam Panionovich. Amy Guth warming up in the bullpen. She will take over the mic at 7 o'clock. We'll talk to Amy in a couple of minutes here. So, as we wrap up the Chris Sale conversation today, Sam.
Yes.
So he had a meltdown that he probably didn't see coming, right? This wasn't a, from what we can tell. I mean, can you imagine? He got to the park, got in a conversation, it spun out of control, lost his temper, got sent home. Like a six-year-old.
That's the Cliff Notes version, yes. Now, we've been sort of hinting at this for the last couple of hours. It's more of what has transpired throughout the course of the last couple of days. Rick Hahn, the GM, says that pretty much nobody's untouchable on Thursday. The rumors run rampant Friday night. The Red Sox are unloading everybody for Sale. The Dodgers want to talk about Sale. And then today, more rumors this morning. I imagine Sale got to the park, you know, had a couple conversations. Maybe the direction of the team came up. Maybe more trades came up. And whatever started today wasn't intended to cause a ruckus. But Chris Sale, temper's been a problem in the past, was sent home by somebody with the White Sox.
See, and people are saying that, but like, I mean, I didn't love what he did with Drake LaRoche, but I never looked at it like Chris Sale's got some massive temper problem or even a temper problem at all.
Well, no, because he does have an edge. It's not locker room changing. It doesn't affect the clubhouse, but I think the direction of the club has a lot to do with it. If you look up in July, near the end of July, in the last four seasons, they haven't been close in any of them.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. It's building.
And there's a lot going on there, and I know that he is not on good accord with Kenny Williams. Now, it's been reported by Fox that Kenny wasn't involved with this spat, dispute, disagreement, whatever word you want to use for it. The fact is, your best player got sent home on a day he was supposed to pitch. That's the main story. That's the thesis.
This is true. Okay. I assume that this is not the end for him, by the way. I think there will be a statement put out by Chris Sale. My guess is there will be a statement from Chris Sale tomorrow. I let my emotions get the best of me. This is on me. I very much want to continue my White Sox career. I've never been a problem and will never be a problem again.
But if he doesn't do that, he's gone. If he doesn't respect the shield, he's gone.
I still wonder if the White Sox, even with this, have an appetite to move him. Maybe they have. I'm sure that appetite's grown some. But I don't know if they really are going to pull the trigger and move him. It would be the biggest story of the season by far if Chris Sale gets dealt. So the American Airlines 1914 Club. I actually am
Is that the name of it behind home plate at Wrigley? I didn't even know it had a name.
Ballpark was developed in 1914, so henceforth the American Airlines 1914 Club.
I thought it would be the Ritz-Carlton Club.
I'm a partial season ticket holder and actually have seats in this section. My friends who are financially successful buy 95% of the seats. You know, these are phenomenal tickets. And if you sit in between home plate or home in between the first and third base dugouts at Wrigley Field, if you join the American Airlines 1914 Club, seats with prime views, this is what the Cubs say about them. Hear the whoosh of the ball, see the swing of the bat. Located behind home plate, between the dugouts, these seats are so close to the action. You can almost step foot onto the field, except for the big screen that's in front of you.
Probably seven different types of mustard.
Unique food and beverage offerings. The American Airlines 1914 Club will feature multiple bars serving premium drinks.
I like that.
Reserve wines will be available for purchase. Unique food offerings.
It's a baseball game.
Inside this club include carving stations, ballpark fan favorites, and delectable desserts on an all-included basis. Members also will enjoy grab-and-go options and dedicated vendors serving traditional ballpark fare directly to their seats at no additional charge to the $7 million you're already paying.
If you'd like, you can sit in this chair. We'll recline it. We'll rub your feet, give you a haircut, too. I mean, you might as well just get everything knocked out.
VIP experience. Before, during, and after the games, you will enjoy an exceptional experience.
Personalized jersey?
Dedicated entrance into the ballpark. You get your own personal entrance.
What does that even mean?
It'll say VIP entrance.
On horseback?
More comfortable seating.
VIP parking?
Hopefully. There's probably none of that left. In fact, I had to park in Evanston on Wednesday. There was no room for me in any of the lots.
David, you'll have a climate-controlled club with multiple bars and unique food offerings. You'll also
valet parking, at least?
No, I don't see that. You'll also have...
There's no room.
You'll also have members-only restrooms located in the club. You can go number one or number two all by yourself in your private bathroom.
Probably a bidet in there.
Yes, to wash your backside. Your premium experience extends beyond game days. As a premier client, you'll receive VIP treatment year-round, including best-in-class customer service with a dedicated Cubs representative. Your own Cubs representative will call you every night and tell you how great you are. You'll get invitations to exclusive VIP events. You'll get access to concert and ticket pre-sales where you can pay exorbitant money to see average to sometimes really good artists. I take that back. Access to pre-game batting practice passes and post-game photo passes. And don't forget the postseason, which the Cubs are going to be in every year. There's nothing quite like fall baseball at the friendly confines. As a premier client, you'll have the opportunity to secure seats to postseason games at Wrigley Field in advance of the general public. You won't be like those schlubs, and that will be, of course, subject.
Is that in the release from the Cubs? The schlub part?
No, the schlub part's not in there. That was my.
I was going to say, you can't attack the people that have been paying year after year after year for seats that aren't that expensive and swanky.
Yeah. No, I mean, the White Sox have, what do they call it, the Scout Club, $250 a ticket. So the Cubs are making the move. Cubbies are doing it, too. It's going to be open just right there behind home plate. The Pink Hat guy, you think he's all in on this?
Ugh.
Pink Hat guy can afford it.
I want to just talk to Amy. I don't even want to talk about this swanky prime rib fancy wine delicacy at Wrigley. Give me a break. Give me a hot dog and a beer every day at the ballpark.
Amy Guth is up next. She'll be making her way into the studio right in a matter of moments.